Good morning, everybody. I'm Thane Fotopoulos, the Vice President of Investor Relations at BCE, and on behalf of the entire Bell Executive Leadership Team here today, I want to welcome you to our 2013 Investor Day conference. It's been a few years since we've met in this kind of forum, 4 years to be exact, and a lot of progress has been made in those 4 years in growing the business and delivering value to BCE shareholders. And we're here to tell you about that, and more importantly, how we intend to keep that up going forward. We're happy to have this opportunity here this morning to give you an in-depth update on our strategies and plans for 2013. However, before we get started, I'd like to remind you that today's event will be webcast. Links to the webcast, along with all supporting materials, are on BCE's Investor Relations webpage. And of course, I also need to cover the Safe Harbor Notice, which is up behind me on the screen. Today's presentations and comments will contain forward-looking statements that represent our expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. We do not undertake any obligation to update any forward-looking statement except as may be required by Canadian securities laws. A number of assumptions were made by us in preparing these forward-looking statements, which are subject to risks. Results may differ materially. Details on these risks and assumptions are in our filings with the Canadian Securities Commission and with the SEC, which are all found on our website. We have a great agenda for you today, as you can see here, so let me quickly cover that with you before we begin. We'll start off with an overview from our CFO, Siim Vanaselja, on our Q4 results that were just released this morning, as well as our 2013 financial guidance targets. Siim will be followed by our President and CEO, George Cope, who will give you a strategic overview and update of our key business initiatives, including a comprehensive wireline overview. Then Marianne Turk and John Watson, our respective EVPs of Field Services and Customer Operations, will cover our service agenda and the strides we've made in that space in positioning Bell, rather, as a leader in customer service. We'll then take a short 15-minute break, and after the break, Wade Osterman, our President of Bell Mobility and Bell Residential Services, will come on and discuss the growth opportunities that are available to Bell in the wireless sector. Next, our Chief Technology Officer, Stephen Howe, will talk to you about our wireline and wireless platforms and how we're leveraging those networks to support the overall growth of the business. And last but not least, Kevin Krull, our President of Bell Media, will provide an overview of the media segment, our newest segment in the company, and he'll tell you the value that asset has brought to us since we acquired CTV back in 2011. We'll then wrap it up with all the presenters in a Q&A session at the end of the morning. So as you can see, quite a busy agenda, and I hope you'll find the day very informative and useful. And on that note, I'll invite Siim to come up on stage and start off the presentations for us. So thanks again.
Thanks, Thane. Good morning, everyone. We are really happy to have this opportunity today to share our strategic plans and our financial outlook with you this morning. What I'm going to do is start with our fourth quarter financial highlights, which we released this morning. I'd say our operations delivered on a steady course with quite a strong contribution from both wireless and media. Total service revenue growth in the quarter of 0.3% represented healthy revenue growth across our growth businesses, across wireless, TV, internet, and media. And that was offset by lower business data product sales, an ongoing voice decline. Bell's EBITDA grew nicely, 2.2% in the fourth quarter, and that increase was driven by our wireless segment, which posted great EBITDA performance. Wireline's EBITDA decline was pretty much in line with what we saw in the third quarter of this year. Our consolidated margin at Bell expanded 80 basis points. That was on improved service margins, both in wireless and in media. At the EPS level, BCE's statutory EPS in the fourth quarter was 91 cents per share. That's up from 62 cents per share a year ago. And that increase reflects, in addition to higher EBITDA, lower year-over-year severance costs. And as well, we had in the quarter a one-time non-cash gain that we realized on the transfer of spectrum from Inukshuk out to its respective shareholders. When we look at adjusted EPS in the quarter, it increased 4.8% to 65 cents per share. And I'll highlight that our effective tax rate this quarter was just below the statutory rate, and that's because the Inukshuk spectrum gain that we realized was non-taxable. I'll also say that there were no tax provision adjustments this quarter. On free cash flow, our operations generated over $600 million in the quarter, representing growth of 7.3%. I think that supports the high level of capital investment we had in our businesses, and at the same time, it further strengthens our balance sheet and our financial position as we move into 2013. Let me turn to our operating results, beginning with wireless. Postpaid subscriber growth was certainly, again, one of the highlights in the quarter. Postpaid net adds of 144,000, up 9% year over year. We believe Bell Mobility again captured an attractive market share of net postpaids in the marketplace. Higher year-over-year postpaid gross adds were led by strong sales of Apple's iPhone 5, as well as the wide lineup of Android devices that the Bell stores carry. Smartphone subscribers now account for about 64% of our postpaid base. That's up significantly since the end of 2011, where we stood at about 48%. And as you know, these are premium customers with higher ARPU and lower churn. Wireless ARPU increased 4.1% in the quarter, and with that, we've now had three consecutive years of ARPU growth. In this intensely competitive fourth quarter of sales, we're also pleased to report that we saw a 20 basis point improvement in postpaid churn to 1.3%. And wireless retention spending in the quarter increased to 12% of service revenues as we matched some of the richer acquisition offers that were in the marketplace. On the financial side, wireless service revenue growth accelerated to 7.4%. That was driven by data revenues, which were up 28% in the quarter. And data revenues now account for close to 40% of our wireless ARPU. Wireless EBITDA was another highlight in the quarter, growing 13.8% year over year, and that's our best fourth quarter wireless growth in 6 years. A good result, I think, given that we've spent an incremental $26 million or so on acquisition and retention in the quarter. The quarter's performance brought Bell's wireless EBITDA growth for 2012 to 15.7%, and our wireless service margin for the year expanded 3.3 points to 41.5%. Wireless EBITDA less CapEx also provided a strong contribution to free cash flow both in the quarter and for the full year. So overall, our wireless position is very well positioned as we head into 2013, and you'll hear more about that from Wade and George. Let's move now to our wireline operations. On the residential side, the quarter was really about Fibe TV, I'd say, and the strong attach rates that we're seeing with other Bell services. Fibe TV posted a record 48,000 net customer additions in the quarter, and we closed 2012 with 248,000 total Fibe TV customers. That gives us an 8% penetration rate of IPTV homes passed. And I think we're really pleased with that performance, the steady gain in penetration we're seeing, recognizing that this is all still at a very early stage. Satellite TV net adds continue to be impacted by the expansion of competitors' IPTV networks in Western Canada and in Atlantic Canada. And as well, we're seeing Bell customer migrations from satellite TV to Fibe TV that are running at about 15% of Fibe TV gross adds. We're also seeing great three-product household penetration with about 84% of Bell's Fibe TV customer base also taking internet and home phone. Internet net adds overall, I'd say, were soft throughout 2012. I do want to say, however, that we expect that to pick up, particularly as our fiber footprint and our IPTV penetration increase. In the quarter, residential NAS erosion showed improvement, and we're definitely seeing a significant reduction in NAFTA losses in our IPTV footprint compared to areas outside of that footprint. And therefore, our strategy remains very squarely focused on continuing to grow that footprint and drive higher levels of penetration. On the business side of wireline, I want to highlight that about half of the NAS losses that we've seen overall for 2012 were due to wholesale customer deactivations with one particular reseller. So if we look at Bell-branded NAS losses, in fact, those have remained relatively stable throughout the year. Looking at the financials for wireline, the pace of revenue decline in the quarter improved. It was driven by TV revenue growth of 5.2% and a slowing voice erosion. Data revenue performance in the quarter was really similar to what we've seen throughout the year, with TV growth being offset by lower data product sales and repricing pressures that we've seen in the business markets. So wireline's EBITDA decline in the quarter was 6.6%. However, we did incur a $9 million charge relating to the CRTC's decision to reduce rates on local loops, and they introduced that decision to lower rates on a retroactive basis back to December of 2009, so that whole $9 million charge came through this quarter. Excluding that charge, Bell's year-over-year wireline EBITDA decline, in fact, improved by about 50 basis points over the third quarter. For 2012 overall, Bell's wireline EBITDA margin was relatively stable at 38.4%. We saw good operating expense reductions and good productivity performance, particularly in our call centers and in our field center operations. In 2013, we expect growth services to become a larger component of our wireline mix, with a stronger contribution from TV and internet and a gradual improvement in business markets. Bell Media, you know, has become such an integral part of Bell's overall operations and financial performance. For the quarter, subscriber revenue growth at Bell Media was up 7% year over year, led by higher specialty programming rates. And I'll add that we do expect to see some more modest rate increases on specialty rate programming throughout the course of 2013, consistent with the new broadcast rate agreements that we've entered into. Advertising revenue in the quarter, however, decreased by about 1%. That was expected, and it was due to the NHL hockey lockout, which impacted advertising revenues both at TSN and RDS. That pressure, however, was offset pretty much by quite a good shift in advertising demand, both to our conventional networks and to our non-sports specialty networks. With the flow-through of higher subscriber revenues and lower programming costs because of the hockey lockout, Bell Media's EBITDA grew quite significantly by 32%. And EBITDA, on free cash flow, if we exclude the non-cash purchase price adjustment amortization, we saw Bell's EBITDA of $199 million in the quarter and EBITDA of $610 million for the full year. You know, remarkably, that's about 75% higher than the EBITDA of CTV at the time of our acquisition back in April of 2011. So that's it on the quarter. 2012, as a full year altogether, I would say was very successful for Bell. We achieved on our full year revenue guidance and surpassed our EBITDA guidance with 4.4% growth. We saw an increase in contribution from our growth services. We were successful in reducing costs, and with that, we expanded Bell's consolidated EBITDA margin to 37.4%. We increased our EPS guidance during the course of the year, and we achieved that increased guidance. And we finished the year with a strong 7% overall growth in free cash flow, which totaled more than $2.4 billion. All of that gives Bell strong operating cash flow, and it enables us to move up our capital intensity during the year to 16.6%, increasing our spending on strategic priorities. So all in all, 2012 had good performance and I think puts us into a really good starting position for 2013. So with that, let me move to our capital markets model. And I have to say it really is pretty simple. We are looking to deliver sustainable shareholder returns through reliable dividend growth. And that objective is underpinned all the while by maintaining healthy levels of growth and investment in our capital investment programs and maintaining a strong balance sheet with solid investment-grade credit metrics. Importantly as well, we have strong alignment of interests now between our shareholders and our management long-term incentive plan. That plan has vesting criteria, which is tied to the company's ability to execute on its dividend growth model. So simply put, as we grow our free cash flow, we're able to grow our dividend, our common dividend, and therefore we create value for shareholders and management alike. Now, we've had a successful track record as a dividend growth company. This morning, we announced a further 6-cent common share dividend increase, which is our 9th consecutive dividend increase since the fourth quarter of 2008. So in total, we've grown our common dividend 60% over that period, and we have one of the best yields on the TSX today. Together with the 10-cent dividend increase that we announced this past August, BCE's common dividend for 2013 is up 7.5% or 16 cents per share, and I think that's a strong reflection of the confidence that we have in our business performance and our free cash flow generation. With this dividend, we expect to maintain BCE's payout ratio just below the midpoint of our target range of 65 to 75% of free cash flow. And you'll know that we have been presenting BCE's dividend payout ratio on the basis of both free cash flow and EPS. And those payouts have always been very comparable. So I want to draw to your attention today that beginning in 2013, we will start expressing our dividend payout solely on the basis of a free cash flow payout. And this change is necessary because of the non-cash impact that results from the new IFRS pension accounting standard, which comes into effect in 2013. And I'll talk about that standard in a moment. On a free cash flow basis, our common dividend payout policy will continue to be maintained at the range of 65 to 75%. And I say that because our pension accounting change is entirely a non-cash change, we think that a free cash flow dividend payout policy is a much better economic measure to use. Importantly, our dividend payout preserves a very high level of cash generation for the company to deploy, giving us excellent overall financial flexibility. Surplus cash amounts to about $800 million a year for us. And I think we've always been pretty balanced in how we've directed that surplus cash and how we've deployed it. Over the last 4 years, we've made $2.75 billion in voluntary contributions to our pension plan. That ensures that our pension plans have maintained a very high funded status, and it really minimizes the ongoing volatility of our pension funding requirements. We've also returned $1.7 billion in value to our shareholders through share buyback programs, and we've enjoyed a remarkable payback on that investment. And we've made strategic acquisitions that you know of, particularly CTV, The Source, Virgin, MLSC, the Montreal Canadiens, and Q9. And we've executed all of those actions while maintaining an overall credit profile that's consistent with our credit objectives. For 2013, talking about excess cash, our plans will be to deploy that cash towards the purchase of wireless spectrum in the upcoming 700 megahertz spectrum auctions that are slated for the fourth quarter of this year. Our capital structure, I think, provides us with quite a solid foundation and a very high level of overall financial flexibility. Our credit ratings all have stable outlooks, and we expect our credit ratios to improve over time as we grow our EBITDA and as we grow our free cash flow. I also want to say that I think Bell is very well positioned with an attractive long-term debt maturity schedule. As you see on the slide, our average term of debt is approximately 10 years. Over the past 4 years, we've taken advantage of low interest rates to reduce our cost of debt by about 200 basis points, with our average after-tax cost of debt today being about 3.9%. And I think you should expect us to continue being opportunistic in pursuing those type of refinancing actions as we see opportunities for them. We also maintain committed lines of credit, giving us access to over $3 billion of liquidity should we need it. And finally, you'll know that our history of financial management has always been a prudent one, and that's not going to change. So let me turn to our financial guidance for 2013. First, I'd say that with the transformation of our operating mix more and more towards growth services and away from wireline voice, we expect Bell revenue growth of up to 2% in 2013. Our consolidated operating margin should be stable, resulting in Bell EBITDA growth of 1.3%, and that should then translate to growth in free cash flow of 5 to 9%. We're looking to manage Bell's capital intensity in 2013 at around 16 to 17% of revenues, and that will allow increased spending to expand our IPTV footprint, to begin implementing pair bonding, to extend our urban LTE build-out, and to meet growth in demand. At the BCE consolidated level, our guidance is for adjusted EPS of $2.97 to $3.03 per share, and that reflects the new accounting for pensions. Lastly, I want to be clear that our financial targets that we're presenting today do not include the pending acquisition of Astral. What we'll do is come back and refresh our 2013 once Astral is closed, which we expect to happen around the end of the second quarter of this year. So a couple of comments on revenue. First, our plan continues to be built around strong growth at wireless. Bell Wireless revenues in 2013 will benefit from the flow-through of strong postpaid subscriber acquisitions in 2012, growth in smartphone penetration, and an increasing share of high-value customers in the West and in business markets. Wireless voice ARPU is expected to continue declining, but will be more than offset by data ARPU growth as higher smartphone penetration, LTE devices, and emerging revenue opportunities like mobile commerce all contribute to growth in overall ARPU. In wireline, we expect improvement in residential NAS erosion as we leverage our growing 5GV footprint to drive both three product households as well as driving greater levels of growth in the MDU market. Stronger TV and internet revenue growth should support total wireline revenues in 2013 being essentially stable on a year-over-year basis. Wireline revenues will also benefit from the residential customers who are coming off significant promotional discounts of last year, and as well from price increases on residential services that we introduced in January of this year. In the business markets, I have to say, we don't have any great crystal balls on the economic front, but we are very positive about the new product and service bundles that we're rolling out for the SMB market, and as well the commercial relationship that we now have with Q9. And with those, we anticipate overall improving business market trends for 2013. Finally, in the Bell Media segment, revenues should remain stable year over year, given the significant sales lift we got from the London Olympics last year. On EBITDA, the main driver for 2013 will also be wireless. In addition, we expect wireline to gradually improve over the course of the year, benefiting from improving revenue performance and additional cost savings. Media EBITDA will be impacted by the retroactive specialty rate increases that we benefited from in 2012. And with all of that, we expect Bell's consolidated EBITDA margin for 2013 to be stable at about 37% to 38%. So I'd like now to specifically address our pension accounting for 2013. As I mentioned, our reporting will be impacted by the new IFRS standard, which requires that the expected rate of return on pension assets has to be reduced to the accounting discount rate. Under the new standard, we will be restating our 2012 pension expense and EPS. That will result in a non-cash reduction of adjusted EPS in the amount of 22 cents for 2012 on a restated basis. Then as we look at 2013, the new standard, together with a lower accounting discount rate that we'll be applying, and that new rate will be 4.4%, all of that will result in about a further 6-cent year-over-year non-cash impact on adjusted EPS. At the EBITDA level, we'll see about a $50 million year-over-year increase in pension current service costs. That comes from applying that new lower discount rate and also from the fact that in 2012, we had a one-time $24 million curtailment gain related to some of our post-employment benefit plans. That's pension expense. On the funding side, Bell's normal cash funding for 2013 and for future years, for that matter, will be maintained at a stable annual level of about $350 million. I want to be very clear that there's no letters of credit that we're using or that we would be planning to use towards the funding of our pension plan. The funding of our plan is at a very high status level right now. In fact, Bell's pension solvency deficit could be eliminated if the discount rate should decline by about 1%. And should that happen, it will reduce Bell's ongoing level of cash funding in future years. And I'd say, in fact, we've already seen about a 25 basis point increase in the discount rate that would be applied to Bell just in the first month of 2013, so we're off to the right start. Our history in managing the pension plan, I think, has always been a very prudent one. I think we've stayed well ahead of it, and I think that's going to benefit us for years to come. So moving on to taxes. Statutory rate is the same in 2013, 26.6%. Our accounting effective tax rate should be just slightly lower than that at 26%. We had a high level of tax adjustments in 2012 of about 18 cents per share. For 2013, we anticipate a lower level of tax recoveries of about 7 cents per share. Lastly, we expect overall cash taxes to be maintained at about the same level, about $300 million in 2013, equal to what we paid in 2012. And our taxes are going to benefit from the tax deductibility of that special pension contribution that we made at the end of last year, and we'll also enjoy higher depreciation, tax depreciation claims, and investment tax credit claims from the increased level of capital spending that we've made over the past few years. So overall, a stable outlook. Turning to EPS, with the new pension accounting standard, our 2012 EPS on a restated basis will be $2.96. And with the higher expected pension expense and lower tax adjustments that I spoke of, we're projecting 2013 adjusted EPS to grow modestly to $2.97 to $3.03 per share. Before tax adjustments, that represents growth of about 4% to 6%. And lastly, on our free cash flow generation for 2013, I think that's going to be quite strong. We expect it to grow to a range of $2.55 billion to $2.65 billion before common dividends. That's a growth target of 5% to 9%. Cash interest payments will be slightly higher in 2013, given the slightly higher level of overall debt that we have from the acquisitions of MLSE and Q9. Our 2013 cash generation, I think, provides solid support both for the higher level of capital investment we're making into the business and for the 6-cent dividend increase that we announced this morning. So on this side, this is really a slide. It's for your reference. It's a breakdown of the main reconciling items between EBITDA and free cash flow, and all of that is in line with our guidance. So to conclude, I think I'd like to say that our 2013 plan is a very solid one and a very achievable one in the eyes of our management. We expect good growth in consolidated revenue, in EBITDA, EPS, and free cash flow. Wireless will lead the way with continued double-digit EBITDA growth and some margin expansion. And Wireline will reach an important point of progress in its business transformation, where it will show improved performance with a more reliable broadband growth mix and improving business markets. All of this will ensure a stable consolidated margin at Bell. So Bell's fundamentals are strong. I think we're well positioned to sustain continued growth for the longer term and continued healthy dividend growth for our shareholders. So thank you. And before I hand it over to George, we'd like to share a short video with you, which we think captures nicely some of the milestones that Bell has delivered over the past 4 years. So let's show that, and then George will be up. Thank you.
The future for Bell is brighter than ever. Today, we look forward. But first, let's take a look back at the milestones of the past few years that have brought us to where we are today. With privatization on the horizon, we set a clear goal and strategy to drive BCE forward. The goal, to be recognized by customers as Canada's leading communications company through the execution of 6 strategic imperatives. Improve customer service. Accelerate wireless. Leverage wireline momentum. Invest in broadband networks and services. Achieve a competitive cost structure. Expand media leadership. Critical to the strategy was the 100-day plan that restructured and streamlined Bell, resulting in a leaner, smarter organization delivering a better customer experience. And that commitment was backed up with the launch of full install for internet and same-day, next-day repair to 95% of Bell's customers. With a clear goal and aggressive investment strategies, we took the competition by storm. With the purchase of The Source and its 700 locations, we vaulted to the number one spot in distribution points in our industry. Acquiring full ownership of Virgin Mobile gave us a popular brand to take on other low-cost entrants to the industry. And then, another significant game-changer, the launch of our HSPA Plus network, a network that allowed us to offer iPhones and gave our devices the ability to work around the world. But we weren't done yet. We purchased an ownership stake in the Montreal Canadiens, giving us a critical marketing vehicle and a window to the hearts and minds of Quebecers. The momentum kept rolling with the Vancouver Olympic Winter Games. We were a national partner and so much more, as every moment of the Games was broadcast to Canada and the world on the Bell Network.
We have done it!
We took leadership in another area, one of the most pervasive yet underfunded health issues facing Canada today, the Bell Let's Talk Mental Health Initiative.
This is a big deal. We want to make a difference for all Canadians.
And in 2010, all of Canada's largest banks agreed that being with Bell was certainly better. We launched Five TV in Montreal and Toronto. In Western Canada, we became the premier founding partner of the Vancouver Whitecaps FC and their exclusive mobile provider. What a year 2010 was, and what a year 2011 would prove to be. Let's start with the formation of Canada's number one media company, Bell Media, making us the true king of content in conventional and specialty TV. Combined with Bell Mobile TV, we now bring Canadians the best and most exclusive content on all four screens.
Yes! We win again!
Bell continues its leadership and investment in broadband networks by being the first to launch an LTE network in Toronto. We're all so proud to have been named the recipient of the Freeman Philanthropic Services Award for Outstanding Corporation. Perhaps our boldest move yet. In late 2011, we changed the game again by purchasing an ownership stake in Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, a proven money-making asset, reinforcing our position as the premier content provider in Canada.
I'm shuffling, shuffling.
In 2012, Bell launched Fiber to the Home in Quebec City, giving homes and businesses across the region the fastest internet speeds and the best television experience. The Nimiq 6 satellite was launched, delivering a more powerful TV signal to viewers across Canada. With our stake in Q9 Networks, Bell now offers business customers access to 18 data centers, and we continued to expand our 4G LTE mobile network across Canada, ending 2012 with 67% of the population covered, and plans to cover 75% by the end of 2013. Our commitment to leadership doesn't end there. Bell was named Canada's greenest company on Newsweek's International Environmental Leaders List. As we move forward into 2013 and beyond, we have a lot to celebrate. We also have a lot of work still to be done, but the last 4 years have shown that the Bell team is capable of great things, and we're just getting started.
And as Seem said, thank you for taking the time this morning to give us an opportunity to give you a much deeper understanding of what we're planning to do in 13 and what we have been doing. As the video hopefully reminds everyone, you know, we have accomplished a significant amount over the past 4 years as a company and for the investment community. But as the video says, I actually truly believe we are now just getting started. The focus of today's agenda is really about 2013 operationally and strategically. But probably more importantly, I felt it was really an opportunity to give the investors a unique time with some of our senior executive. The executive team that we have built in this company over the last 5 years, I'm convinced, would stand up to any telco or cable leadership team on the globe. And we want to give you that opportunity to hear from those leaders today as investors in Bell. And as Seem talked about, you know, we accomplished a lot in 2012, and I'll just quickly add a few comments to the year. If you go back to 08 and you look at where we are today, you know, operationally in 2012, leading, and we believe we will lead the industry this year in postpaid net adds, wireless ARPU growth, and EBITDA when all the numbers are in for the year. Increasing our consolidated Bell EBITDA margin year over year in that declining voice challenge we have on the local access side. Again, reducing our OPEX costs, this time $166 million, bringing our cost reduction since 2008 to well over $1 billion. And that excludes the working capital improvements of well over $500 million. $250,000 5 TVs. Under Kevin's leadership, not easy because sometimes we compete with these people and sometimes their customers in terms of the distributors, but we settled agreements with all of the BDUs in Canada. And most importantly, significant improvement in our service, which drives lower churn. We're going to spend a lot of time on the strategic stuff this morning, but strategically expanding our what we call FTTX, which would be fiber to the node or fiber to the home, ending the year at 5 million homes passed and 3.3 million as we'd said we would achieve in terms of 5 TV. Launching the largest city in Canada with fiber with Quebec City, 100% fiber, and absolutely thrilled with those results. Wireless, as we mentioned, LTE at 67% of the population. Acquiring the ownership in MLSC, securing us access and price going forward onto the most important content in the media business in Canada, and that being sports, and also something we're seeing on a global basis. Acquiring ownership of Q9, positioning ourselves in the fastest area of growth in the enterprise space, and that's the data hosting and cloud computing market. And we were hoping to have a check mark there, as everyone knows, but still pending the Astro acquisition, which, as Seem said, we're very confident will close the middle of this year. This slide, to me, is very important for the investors. We have had a dramatic change in our revenue mix in the last 5 years. And I'm going to share a few numbers we wouldn't normally share just to make sure the investment community can see what's really happening underneath our revenue. Over 80% of our revenue in 2013 will be driven from our growth portfolio, and 20% will be from voice. Importantly, of course, business voice is much more stable than consumer voice, because consumer substitution we're continuing to see on the wireless side. So we will actually exit 2013 pro forma the Astro transaction with consumer voice revenue representing less than 7% of our revenue. Okay, and that is significant, as of course the analysts know, if you look at what our mix was a few years ago, because a 10% decline on a 7% of your base is a heck of a lot different from where we were 4 or 5 years ago. So an absolutely critical transition in our revenue stream is going, if you will, through time through our revenue and also our mix with all the growth in our growth portfolios. You saw in the video, we're a little boring. 6 strategic imperatives, same story going forward. We execute successfully in the marketplace on these 6 strategic imperatives. We continue to generate the free cash flow that we're building the company on the basis for the capital markets on, which is an improving free cash flow, allows us to continue to do what this asset should best do, which is generate dividend growth, steady dividend growth over time for shareholders. So if we take a look at our broadband network strategy for next year, you'll notice we've creeped up our capital intensity from that 16% to a 16 to 17% range next year. We did not want to cut our capital back because the Astrel transaction did not close, so we creeped it up a little bit. Right investment, and also you can see with our free cash flow guidance, we have lots of room to do that. From a wireless perspective, we will end 2013 with 75% of the population covered, getting to 98 ultimately after the 700 auction is completed. We will cover rural Canada with LTE, and we'd expect that rural coverage to happen obviously in 2014, as we now expect the auction to take place late in 2013. And it is worth mentioning, also over the last 4 or 5 years, Canada has become the global leader in wireless technology, but there is no other country in the world that has 3 LTE networks like we have in Canada. It's incredible how the industry has changed in Canada, and we lead. Go to Europe, your handset will go back 3 levels of technology. The concept that other places in the world are ahead of Canada in wireless technology are quite frankly wrong. We are ahead of the world in wireless technology. Turning to our wireline acceleration, it's all about broadband and fiber. Getting fiber as close to business and as close to the home as we possibly can, and extending our IPTV footprint. And we'll extend our IPTV footprint this year, and Stephen Howe will share a little better detail than I can, but we'll do part of that through the introduction of pair bonding, which will increase the distance that will allow us to actually extend our IPTV footprint and over time speed, and Stephen will talk about that. We do fiber to the home now in every greenfield. Any new neighborhood that's built, we build fiber right to the house. All condominiums, we build fiber to the buildings that have been going back to all the condominiums in Toronto and across all of our footprint. And also, from a business perspective, we're building fiber to many more buildings this year. And anywhere we have aerial plant that does not have fiber to the node, we are putting it in using fiber, because aerial plant with fiber is, quite frankly, at this point, is economical for us or very close versus doing fiber to the node. Thirdly, continual capital program and customer service, and John and Marianne are going to show you the great results in a few minutes, and they'll also show you what we're going to do going forward this year. And one of our key imperatives has been an improvement in customer service. And, you know, some of these significant numbers will be shared, as I mentioned, with Marianne and John. We've had a dramatic improvement in what we call first call resolution, which drives cost and obviously drives customer satisfaction. We have tools now that measure the success of individual customer experiences, and if it's not where we need it to be, we have ways to reach out to that customer. And our field service operation is second to none now in North America. We will put ourselves up against any competitor in the cable or telco market in North America in terms of on time in the home and the customer response to that. And driving improved service drives churn down, and importantly for you, drives our costs down going forward. At the end of the year 2012, we launched a number of services. John will talk about this as well, but a real focus on self-service functionality. On the wireless side, we launched a new app. Customers can track their wireless usage, check their balances, make payments, all of this online, and we've seen millions of users already, and we just launched that in the fourth quarter. And on the online side, from our TV business, where customers can go in and upgrade or lower the package they want, select the programs they want, and track their internet usage real time from a billing perspective. All these areas, what the customer wants to see, and from our perspective, again, drive significant cost opportunities for us going forward. And I think one of the issues always for investors with our story is how much cost? You know, what can you continue to achieve? And let me just step back and remind investors, we have a $10 billion cost structure. So a 1% productivity in cost for us, remember, is $100 million. We expect in 2013 to further reduce costs another $170 million. And that will come through these the call center efficiencies and field service productivity tools I just talked about, workforce reduction through normal attrition and retirements. As our employee base ages and we put in place the productivity tools, we don't need to necessarily replace employees who decide to leave the company or actually meet retirement, and that drives our cost structure down. Over 50% of our wireless customers today do not get a paper bill. They choose to get their bill online, and so that is obviously dropping costs and, quite frankly, is why we've been recognized globally as the most green company in Canada. Further reductions have been negotiated with all of our major suppliers for 2013 on both billing, software licenses, set-top box, and logistics. There is no Olympics in 2013. Not great if you're a sports fan, but if you're in Bell, that's a good thing this year. If I'm looking at our cost side, because our costs will be less to execute this year. And this does not include any of the significant synergies we expect Kevin will be able to sort through when we integrate Astro with Bell Media. And most importantly, a satisfied customer from our end costs us less to support. And that's been key to what we've done. I think the mix slide is really important. I think this is probably, from what Seem and I have seen in talking to our major shareholders, a really important slide. Because there is a perception that our wireline margin is somehow going to where other wireline margins are in North America, and that's not going to happen. People forget that we already have a $2 billion TV business in our revenue stream. Yes, our wireline is challenged, but we think 2013 starts to be a bit of a turn in that. So we, in a rare kind of, not really guidance, but to give you a sense, we expect our wireline EBITDA growth, which was a negative 5 to 6 this year, will be in the 2 to 4 range as we go into 2013. Why will that happen? While we're coming out of the J-curve on 5 TV, we've already seen that we bottomed on the negative EBITDA of 5 TV. We're going through some of those promotions that we did to launch the initial service. The customers are now seeing those rates come off, those discounts. The market has absorbed some price increases, both from the cable operators and from ourselves. Our business performance, B2B, has improved, and we expect to improve this year as the Ontario-Quebec economy shows some signs of job growth. And I mentioned already the further cost savings. We expect our EBITDA margin to come in around 37%. Interestingly enough, higher than our EBITDA margin was in wireline in 08 and 09, when over 30% of our revenue was from voice. And if you take the non-cash charge in our pension, it actually is relatively flat year over year. And so, you know, that I think is a real stake in the ground for us, and one that so many of you have brought to our attention, and we wanted to make sure you had some clarity around that as investors and what we're planning to do in 2013. Also on the wireline side, of course, Sean talked about, for us it's about Fibe TV. Fibe TV is growing, 250,000 subs at the end of 12. 85% of our TV subs are coming from cable operators or new growth. 15 is migrating from our satellite business. We expect that to continue to happen, the migration from part of our satellite portfolio. Obviously, our satellite portfolio lends itself perfect in some markets, and that's where we have to focus to move our market share. 3.3 million homes covered. 84% of the customers with Fibe TV take all three services. Importantly, 100% of customers who have Fibe TV take Internet. And that's, you know, fundamental to what we need to do going forward to grow our Internet market share. This slide probably best shows what's happening, where we have IPTV and where we do not. We are actually positive RGU growth in the footprint where we have IPTV. So our Internet and IPTV growth is more than our NAS losses. So strategy, add more IPTV footprint. And so you can see in 2013, we think we will be right on the cusp of as many clients left, if you will, in the other footprint added, if you will, where we expand IPTV footprint. So very close to break even. And that's obviously very important to the revenue stream of our consumer wireline business and the lower revenue from voice as we go forward into 14, 15, and 16. So we're going to expand footprint. And there are significant markets we are not in today, Ottawa being the largest. So we will go into the Ottawa market with Fibe TV with the same type of marketing that we did in Quebec City, and we expect to move the needle for market share for us and away from our competitors in the TV business. And so we will end the year with 4.3 million. You can see we'll launch Markham, Laval, North Shore, South Shore, Montreal, all these markets. And what's really important for our marketing team, that gives us the ability to market this product in a much broader way through many more distribution channels, because when it's available, if you will, in a footprint that large, the marketing is much more effective. So we're really excited about it. 4.3 million homes covered of our 7 million homes at the end of 2013. Bonding will expand our IPTV footprint in current footprint. It takes a distance where right now you need to be 900 meters from the home where the fiber starts to 1,400 meters when we go to bonding. And we will introduce bonding the middle of this year. And then later this year, into the mid part, we will actually roll out a wireless set-top box, which means you'll have multiple boxes in the home that are wireless for IPTV. That will take installation time down dramatically for Mary Ann, make us much more competitive than we already are, where Fibe already has an advantage. Customers can move the box. You can actually sit outside, whatever you want to do in terms of the box being wireless. Takes install times down, cost times, and quite frankly, we think it's going to be a game changer for us with Fibe TV. On the business market side, as Seem said, I mean, clearly that is so economically driven for us. Yes, there's substitution and there's competition, but clearly job growth is what drives our business growth. And because we're so focused on Ontario, Quebec, we have a $4 billion business unit, and that's wireline. That excludes our wireless B2B. You add $1 billion for wholesale, we have a $5 billion business there. And quite frankly, job growth will have that asset growing better than we have historically, and we're cautiously, as all of us are, optimistic that job growth in the U.S. will drive some job growth in Ontario and Quebec. Our investment in Q9 and our own data centers gives us 19 data hosting centers, sets us up perfectly for our customer base. We see about a 30% connectivity attach rate to data hosting. So now we have the number one data hosting partnership and our own locations in Canada. Absolutely in the sweet spot of our customer base. 96 of the top 100 companies in Canada use Bell today, and we obviously want to manage their hosting and data services going forward. Turning to wireless, I would say probably the item that the management team at Bell is most proud of, and that is the turnaround of our wireless business, to go from where we were to back into a leadership position, yes, head-to-head, with two really good competitors, but we're in the game and we're competing aggressively. And a number of things have taken place to do that. So many investors ask, so what exactly, what's the one thing you did? It's not one thing, it's all these items that have been important under Wade's leadership, launching the new network, making the strategic acquisitions, leading the industry in distribution. And I have to give Wade Osterman credit here. Wade said 3 years ago retail was going small screen, and he said buy the source. And he was absolutely dead on, and having small retails turned into a competitive advantage because the products have got smaller. 80 million Canadians go through the source a year, and we have a store within 5 kilometers of every Canadian. So, I mean, it's a powerful distribution. Refresh the brand, improving customer service, and Wade Osterman, John Watson, and Stephen Au have more experience than any executive team in Canada in wireless. So we have a great team leading that base with a proven track record. And this slide probably tells the story the best. The real internal goal of Bell is not 33% of postpaid market share. It's 33% postpaid market share, but more than that of incremental revenue and EBITDA share. So you want to punch above your weight. You want to be reasonable in market share, but out execute on revenue and EBITDA. And you can see in the previous 12 months, yes, 39% of the net adds, but 43% of the revenue and 54% of the incremental value. So 54% of the industry's growth in EBITDA we captured of the incumbents over the last 12 months, and you can see the same the year before. And the year before, well, that was the acceleration of the market share move to be back in the game against our two competitors. The media acquisitions, you know, really they have met our objective, probably exceeded our expectations, and I think fair to say investors' expectations. As you know, we had no great strategy here. We followed. We followed our cable competitors who had vertically integrated. Ironically, the name vertical integration didn't come up until Bell vertically integrated, but all of our competitors had vertically integrated. So, you know, if you step back and say, has it been a growth opportunity? Yes. Has it accelerated our positioning from a four-screen perspective? Absolutely. The market is moving to TV everywhere, and Kevin's going to talk about that. We've had some differentiation in the market with mobile TV leadership, and an industry that's so competitive, having differentiation is really valuable. It's been a great hedge against our programming costs, which are now, you know, we spend more than $600 million a year on content, and now we're going to end up buying roughly a third of that from ourselves. And we leveled the playing field against the cable operators. People have to, it's important for investors to remember, Rogers was vertically integrated, Quebecor was vertically integrated, and Shaw was vertically integrated. And all of a sudden, people weren't giving us access to the content, so we bought content to make sure that no one would ever deny us access to content, and that's working very well. And most important for you, it's been very shareholder value accretive, as Seema talked about. Kevin will touch on this, but clearly 2012, an important year, because for us, the first full year of ownership of the asset, great financial results, great new contracts with the BDUs, global leadership from an Olympic perspective, and tremendous, therefore, for the brand. And 13, it's all about maintaining that viewership leadership, containing our programming costs, both in Canada and the U.S., leveraging our investment in MLSC and the Montreal Canadiens, because we have access to that content, and obviously many new product introductions, and most importantly, from a corporate development perspective, getting that Astral transaction closed. In terms of our regulatory agenda for 13, for the investors, I think there's really three key files. Excuse me. The first one being the Astral transaction. We expect the hearing to be in the spring. We anticipate that we know already we will need CRTC and Competition Bureau approval, and we'll make sure we have those in that time frame. And we would expect closing to be in the summer time period, subject to the hearing happening in spring and then getting the approval. There will be our application will meet the requirements that the CRTC wants to see. There is no doubt the rules changed from the first proposal to what the CRTC now wants to see. And so the assets that we will put forward to meet those requirements will become clear to the investing community at the time the file comes out. But even so, we believe we can meet all of our strategic objectives. With that acquisition, it will still be accretive, and Kevin will make a few comments in a moment. In terms of the spectrum auction, 700 megahertz is strategic for Bell. We will participate in that auction, and we will secure spectrum to make sure we can execute our strategy in the marketplace going forward for Canadians in rural markets, because 700 is tremendous for rural Canada and allows us to continue the leadership that Canada has globally by getting LTE into all those rural markets as quickly as we can. The policy does encourage investment nationally. We think it's the right policy in terms of what's been put forward. I think the auction, we expect it now in the fourth quarter. I think the rules continue to come out a little slower than we anticipated. And one of the issues for us, we want to make sure is that there is some set-aside spectrum, which we're fine with, but we want to make sure there are actual companies who are going to bid for that spectrum. And if they're not, we're really pushing hard that if they're not able to bid or someone decides not to, that spectrum shouldn't just be handed to someone. In some way, it should be re-entered into another auction. So if people are not prepared to step up and acquire that spectrum, we want to see that put back in. And so you hear us voicing that. Having said that, if everyone's prepared to participate, we're comfortable where the rules are today. We just don't want to have spectrum not going anywhere and not deployed, and we've just seen that happen already. Spectrum that was auctioned 4 years ago has now been sold through a process with an option on it, and there was no deployment of that spectrum, a complete waste of spectrum in this country. We need to deploy it in the country for the wireless industry. And then the wireless code of conduct. This is an important hearing. It's one that the three wireless carriers, the major carriers, have asked the CRTC to do. Because what we were running into was each of the provinces wanted to see certain different codes in each province. We thought, you know, to be consistent with the country's productivity agenda and for our companies and for the shareholders, one code would be much better than having a code by province, especially from an IT perspective, which takes productivity out of the Canadian economy if we all have different programs for every store in every province. So we'd like to see one national code. We're encouraged by what we've seen the CRTC announce. We think a number of those things are the right steps. A number of those are being done. Some we're all looking to do, so I think it should be a very positive outcome. The only caution I would have, and we're going to push very hard on this, we can't have a code and then say, but each province will then have a code as well. Otherwise, we've totally defeated the purpose of having a national code. And so that's paramount for us. It's paramount, I think, for investors and for Canada to have one national wireless code that we all follow and go through. As I said already, Canada leads the world in wireless technology, and we want to continue to do that after this, of course. So 2013, keep the wireless momentum, improve the wireline trajectory that I've showed you how we plan to do that, accelerate IPTV footprint, execute the cost reductions, that transformation of revenue mix, and growing our free cash flow 5-9%, and that excludes the Astro transaction, which, as you know, is also cash flow accretive as we go forward. Seem showed you this slide. I just want to give you a sense of how I think about it as well, and in one sense how the board of directors thinks about this. We want to continue to see that excess cash flow, which you see of about $800 million a year, where we can deploy it on strategic agendas, be it pension or acquisition or spectrum. And the reason we increased the dividend today, if you look at our guidance, we're right in the midpoint at 69% free cash flow with the dividend that we announced. And so that's why we're able to raise the dividend based on our confidence in our free cash flow going forward next year. So that's a quick overview of where we are. We're going to get into a little more detail now than normal. I'd like to call up Mary Ann Turk, who's our Executive Vice President of Field Services. She's going to give you a sense of how we're able to improve service while at the same time drive costs out of the business. So Mary Ann, over to you. Thank you.
Got to lower this down. Great. Well, thanks, George, and hello, everyone. I'm going to take a little time today to take you through a little bit of a journey we've been on, and what I believe are some unprecedented gains in productivity and service that the field operation has made at Bell Canada, but more importantly, what I think are some outstanding opportunities still yet to come. Before I took over the operation in the middle of 2008, I was buried in lots of decks from lots of bankers and lots of consultants around the continent about the $150 million or so cash opportunity there was in this business. So now we're approaching the end of 2013, at the end of this year, and that number should be about $250 million. So we've done some really good work. And these aren't the results of one-timers. What these are fundamental, efficient and smart practices that we've developed over the last 4 years that really make this operation different and really make it, we have a sustainable operating advantage going forward. From what I've seen, I believe I have one of the best operating teams in the world, and we're going to get into it a little bit now, and I want to show you what we've done, and I want to show you some of the opportunities we have going forward. Okay, I've got to move over here because everyone's taller than me. They can see the screen. Who are we? So we are the force that services every single business and residential customer at Bell Canada. We build every meter of fiber that is out there. We have three broad teams you can see there, Bell Canada Technicians, Bell Technical Solutions, and also Expertech. They are governed by 8 different collective agreements in the CEP, and that's not nearly as scary as it seems. Our technicians are really, really good. We want them to do the work, and the CEP wants them to do the work too. And over the last 5 years, we've made historical gains in working with our labor relations partners in getting unprecedented flexibility and unbelievable productivity from these agreements. This was really hard, painful work, but I believe that it's put us at an advantage over some of our competitors as we move forward. It's a structural advantage, and I'll explain to you why I believe that in a couple of minutes. And as for scale, well, we do about 1.6 million repair tickets every year, about 2.5 million orders every year, about 4.5 million truck rolls every year, and last year alone we built 3,300 kilometers of fiber, mostly in Quebec. So George mentioned, you know, our mantra, my mantra from the beginning has really been that, simply put, doing things well is going to cost us less, period. Let me give you a few examples. How about we train the technicians on internet so they can do the job? That's where we started about 4.5 years ago. How about we give them laptops and test sets so that they can test the lines properly and get it done right the first time? How about instead of shipping modems all over the place, we actually show up with a technician, install the modem, activate it, and explain to the customer how our fantastic internet product works. You saw in the video full install, that's what we did. How about we commit to 95% of the time being there same day or next day for every single repair call that we make. That's our same day, next day promise. This same day, next day promise saves us money. It saves us money because it shortens the sunk capacity in the system. In operations, the closer the time between the order being placed and that capacity being deployed, your operation by definition becomes a whole lot more efficient. And you'll see we've done that in provisioning and we've done that in repair as well as same day, next day. How about as we go forward, we figure out a way to optimize our load, our work, in day, throughout the day, so that we can play real time with our capacity. And what if we have mobile devices integrated with GPS, with our load, so that we not only know where the tech is, but we know where he's at in his work, and so that we can play with capacity as we move through the day, shortening our white time, our white space, and shortening our waiting on work time. Every minute counts. I said before that materiality matters in this business. In large-scale operations, materiality really matters. And in this operation, if you do the math, about 5 minutes of savings, if we save 5 minutes on every single job we do, it's worth about $25 to $30 million of cash a year. So we sweat the details in operations, and I'll show you a little bit of what we're going to do now. Customer service simply is better in the field. Same day, next day repair I talked about, on time. This for me was the cost of admission. If we say we're going to be there between 8 and 12, we're going to be there between 8 and 12. I expect it of my teenagers and I expect it of my technicians. Technicians are more compliant. Fill orders faster. Go from 8 days to 2 days on internet. I talked about the nature of the math behind the operation. The shorter the distance of time between needing capacity and deploying capacity, the better off you are. We double down on that benefit with provisioning because slippage is also profoundly better when you install after 2 days of the order being taken as opposed to waiting for 8. Inside support wait time. This is really important. A technician is in the home and he's having problems. He had to wait 45 minutes to get someone on my team to pick up the phone. So how about when you're in the house and you're having problems, somebody somewhere pick up the phone? Because as soon as we pay the money to roll the truck, everyone's job becomes helping that job get done. Everybody's job, my job, and every single person that works for me, because we've already deployed the resources, and that's the most valuable thing we have. So we got a lot better there. Branded trucks and clothing, Wade did a great job on helping us with that. Our guys are so proud to wear the Bell Blue every day, and our customers are more confident in what we stand for and what we are going to do every time we walk in the house. And simply put, our customer satisfaction with our techs is unbelievably high at 92%. Of that satisfaction of 92%, 80% of those customers would give us a perfect score of 5 on 5, and we ask every single one of them. So moving forward, there are three facts of wireline operations, and it's the same anywhere. Product mix is constantly changing. George talked about that. Field load is innately volatile, and you must have the right person at the right place with the right time. Managing all of these three things together under tighter and tighter service constraints without adding buffer resources is what makes a good operation a great operation. Lots of people run operations with too many people, but those operators, frankly, just aren't part of a wireline operation that has consistently posted 10-point margin advantage over the competitors. When we think about a product mix constantly changing, so we basically are transitioning a voice workforce into a TV workforce, from a copper tech who installed jacks in the house to a veritable in-home consultant. Pick your best guys and make them better. They have to apply, they have to meet our standards, and they must work when and where the work is. I referred earlier to our labor relations gains. When we first started going to TV, a TV install is 2 to 3 times that of a voice install. So it shouldn't surprise anyone, and it didn't surprise me that a lot of customers were expecting Saturday and Sunday appointments. Only our collective agreements didn't allow for that. Our scheduling didn't allow for that. We simply, well, it wasn't so simple, but we basically went to the union and said, if you want the work, we're going to open a collective agreement. We have 6 weeks. Open it, close it, and the work is yours. Let's go. And we did it, and it was the first time in history that we did it with our Bell Technical Solutions workforce. And we took our very best internet technicians and we put them on TV because it was our most important product. And now we have some of the best technicians in the business in North America doing this work. Control the customer experience. What do I mean by this? Scale where you can and incubate where you need to. Launching IPTV is a very scary, scary process. We talked to a lot of people before we did it. And we chose very, very wisely to scale where we needed to. We had a scalable operation in the field. I talked about how we trained the internet technicians. But we also built a super caliber inside technician so that when our new technicians were out in the field, they had somewhere to call, a safe place to call where they could get help. Was it scalable? No. Was it expensive? Sort of. Was it worth it? It was worth every single penny. Today, our repair dispatch rate for average in-service subscriber at a few hundred thousand subs is better than those that are a few million subs. So we climbed the learning curve way faster, way steeper than a lot of others that have gone before us, and it saved us millions in the process. Excuse me. And finally now, as we look forward, we're going to start to deal with productivity in IPTV. From my perspective, there was just no use in rushing through an install for it not to be done right. So we took the time and we learned what we needed to learn. Now, as we move forward, there's a new level of maturity in the IPTV operation, and we will start to turn our attention to productivity. The single biggest factor for IPTV productivity is technician tenure. As a tech climbs the learning curve, which lasts about 12 months, we see the single biggest gain in time per job and in quality. And just to give you an idea of the numbers, in 2011, 80% of our technicians working on IPTV had less than 12 months of experience. In 2012, that number was 60%, and this year it's going to be 35%. Technicians' average install time decreases by about 15 minutes. That's average. Decreases by about 15 minutes between the first and the second year, but more importantly, the standard deviation over which our technicians perform shrinks. So when you're managing an operation, the lower the standard deviation in each little unit of work, the much more efficient you can be. And we've had huge gains from that, and that will move forward as well. George talked about the wireless set-top box. About 30% of the time in our installs, we have to rewire the entire house. We use the existing coax if we can, but 30% of the time we have to rewire. And this isn't the rewiring, you know, of a decade ago where you staple gun the telephone wire to the top of the baseboard. This is fishing wires through big homes so that we can get our product working. And it can take our guys anywhere between 60 to 120 minutes to do it. It puts a massive tail on the back end of install time. And when George talked about this being a big impact for us this year, it will be huge. Finally, the customer tutorial. It may not seem like a big thing, but we do spend a lot of time at the end of installs taking our customers through the product, through the features, how to work it. If we don't, it just ends up in a call coming back through John's shop, which costs us more money. So this year, we're putting that customer tutorial online. It is a tool that we have in our toolbox, but I've made it clear as if that customer wants us to stay and hold their hand through that tutorial, we will stay and we will spend the time to do so. But it's another tool in our productivity toolbox as we move forward into next year. When I talk about field load, you know, our field load can fluctuate as much as 20 to 30% on any given day, depending on weather and depending on outages and other elements. In addition, it does fluctuate between 30 to 40% depending on the season, with the July move in Quebec and the student inward at universities being our two peaks. If you overlay the geographical nature of our business, you end up with a pretty complex algorithm in terms of resource allocation. You overlay that again with the fact our same day, next day promise means every morning when I wake up, I only know about 40% of the work I have to do that day. This is where we spent a lot of time. How many resources do I need on each day? It's where I spend my money. It's where I write my checks. The only way I spend less money is to have less resources on the load. But how many do I need? This is the big question, and this is where I personally and our team spent a lot of time developing some of the best mathematical minds in the business around the algorithm for predicting how many people we need and where, so that we don't have buffer resources out there and we are able to skate the fine line of the optimization of service and cost every single day. Our labor force, again, gives us a structural advantage here. At Bell Technical Solutions, 40% of my technicians are part-time. That's unprecedented in the telco space. It means I have unbelievable flexibility, from rearranging eight-week schedules to due date minus one calls to frantic phone calls the morning of, when my load is coming in too high. No other telco has that kind of flexibility with a workforce that they own. Finally, the right person in the right place. I spoke about our seasonal load. Obviously, if your load fluctuates up 30 to 40% in the summertime, you're going to need to hire a whole bunch of people every summer. We hire between 600 to 800 technicians every single summer to meet a peak load that lasts between 4 and 5 months. It became very clear to me very quickly that I simply had to become the best in the world at hiring and training because I can't afford to have a technician come on the load for that short of time and not be really good at what he does. It's part of the problem is wireline networks are very complicated, and when you hire new people, you can't put them on the load because new fingers in a network create problems, and repair problems cost you a lot of money. We are going to be the first in the world around our dispatch model. We are going to be the first in the world to integrate advanced in-day optimization with a mobile technician device that puts us ahead on every measure in terms of productivity, compliance, scheduling, tracking. You can pretty much name it. We have it in the field trial right now, and our techs are loving it. And in the land of materiality, I want you to think about this. Today, our technicians have laptops. It takes them about 5 minutes to log into the VPN just to get their work. tomorrow with a mobile device, they'll hit the screen of the device. Every 5 minutes counts, and every 5 minutes means a lot. And driving that through the field is what we're going to be doing here in the next couple of years. Let's talk a little bit about managing here while I finish off. We have a database of every job every technician does and how long it takes them to do it. We measure every technician on his time versus a standard time we set, and we raise the level of that standard every single year. Each manager is stacked ranked at the end of every quarter based on the total results of his crew, the difference between the time it takes his crew to do average work versus the standard that we have set. This list is reviewed, all 1,000 managers, by me. The top performers, provided they meet quality gates that we set, are rewarded. And it's the only productivity-based incentive compensation program that we've seen in the telco space. And it works. It's comprehensive, it's rigorous, it's repeatable, and it has motivated my folks to do what's right for the business. Finally, our sustainable competitive operating advantage that we've built over the last 5 years. We work hard at being the smartest around optimizing the equation of cost and service every day. We execute, and we execute well. I say to my folks, we standardize, we measure, we adjust, and we repeat. We do it all over again. It's what we do every month and every quarter. We are a world-class field operations, but the most important point on the page is the last one. Thank you very much, and I'd like to invite John up.
They flipped it in. Oh, good. Great. Welcome, and thank you. I'd like to build on some of the great work that Mary Ann's been doing to give you a window into what we call customer operations. So a bit of history. A little over 2 years ago, my role was newly created. It was a focus on improving customer experience within mobility as well as the residential part of the business. You know, I think it was an important milestone of having an executive responsible for customer experience at Bell. You know, essentially, Wade and I split the P&L. It's a structure that he and I have proven to be successful in the past. You know, at the time, Bell lagged in the area of customer experience on a number of levels, and our costs were significantly higher and on the increase at that point in time, and the two tend to go hand in hand. I'm pleased to report that we've made very significant gains through that over time. And this slide gives you an example of what I'm responsible for. So Mary Ann owning field, if you look at the bottom of this slide, you know, I pick up the areas of customer service. I also look at churn and loyalty management, all facets of that. Experience transformation projects, the CapEx projects that George showed that my team drives, as well as business intelligence. And much of the remainder of my presentation will cover off these topics. Similar slide to Mary Ann's, very simple, but succinctly sums up what we want to do. The difference between hers and mine is I add in the churn component. Looking after the churn element is a huge win for our business, but also one that's very integral to operations. It's a different point of structure for us than our competitors. Most don't have that lined up within an operating construct, but we find it works better. It helps us learn faster than the competition by knowing what's going on at every point in the feedback loop, and then driving that back through with Wade. We also believe that our focus here is really one of quality. If you summed it up, what you hear throughout my presentation and see on my slides is that quality versus cost focus. Quality always comes first. Cost is a secondary benefit that comes, and it's sustainable at that point and drives competitive advantage. The last 2 years have been busy. In integrating the residential and mobility teams created a lot of benefits for us as we rolled through. Bringing these teams together was one that was a lot of work, but one that has created a more powerful group at the end of the day. I think, again, the structure allows us to learn faster, scaled efficiencies that accrue through that, normally by bringing groups together. Also, ownership of the household, a key component for us in looking at a triple of the future, many of times as a wireless phone, not a wired one now within that construct. And the overlap between what is internet, between Wi-Fi through to being on our 4G network, and the seamless experience that customers need to have through that is a core focus for my shop. Also lined up there on CapEx projects we talked about, I've got some greater details into that, but very significant investments in that space and ones that are really delivering some great ROIs for the business. Our results, how are we doing? You'd see much of this with the financials that Seem brought about, but things are certainly moving in the right direction. These are two components of what we look at. One is the satisfaction score, similar to Mary Ann's, that shows tremendous progress improvement. The other looks at Net Promoter Score. For anyone who's not familiar with Net Promoter, NPS is just simply a measure of your customers recommending your products and services to friends and family. And when you look at that jump, not only does that represent a great benefit from an experience perspective, churn perspective, but anyone who's close to the tenets of NPS realize that that's your best salesperson, that's your best sales advocacy that really helps on the other side of the equation. I think, especially in the mobility business, this is working very well. And willingness to recommend is helping us on the gross ad side. Our results also were confirmed by a lot of the benchmark external surveys that are out there. In this case, I'm referencing Forrester with a 48% bump. Everyone takes a look at these, and your progress essentially is quite important. And sequentially, year after year, we're seeing nice, sustainable gains, and we think that has lots of runway into the future on that side as well. It's a pretty simple equation. Satisfied customers, they don't churn, and they don't call you as often. So on this slide, really pleased with the results we've created on the churn side. You know, the benefits of the financials is very, very significant. Probably one of the most accretive things that we can bring on deck is a better churn level. Very, very happy that our results now are eclipsing probably a number set 4 or 5 years ago. And also we moved into the number two spot. Now, moving to the number two spot, we also did that while spending less. Not an easy thing to do. Very proud of those results for the team. Now, also with that, I'm identifying the kind of call volume reductions we've experienced. So more subscribers on smartphones. Generally in the past, as your base grows and smartphone subs grow, your costs go up. We've shown absolutely the inverse here. So quite pleased with the progress on both of those sides and the results around it. A little bit of detail on churn improvements. None of these are things that you wouldn't know or have seen before, but you know what's magical about this is how they work in sync. You know, George had a slide that framed up all the goodness created on wireless. Double-clicking on the churn one, these are the key drivers, and all of them sustainable, all of them ones that are getting better and better each quarter as we drive along. Operating expenses. So great improvements. It's clear when you're executing well, you've got the right strategy, the right team on deck. Really good things happen in terms of your cost to support each subscriber. And what I don't show on this slide is what was happening between 09 and 10. In 09 and 10, we had double-digit increases in cost. So the framing of this from double-digit increases to significant benefits, and you also see quite a bit of transparency in 2013. Don't usually show this, but we see continued success and progress through 2013 as part of this program. A little bit about our roadmap. So we've got four key drivers of our roadmap. Down below you see some things that I'd call our purpose within my team. So make it right, make it personal, make it better. You know, simple language, but very powerful when it becomes ingrained into the culture of thousands of people providing service and every touch point and every experience that we have. We've also worked really hard to create a much more competitive leadership team. Many fewer folks, many stronger folks in terms of what we do there. And as Mary Ann said, I think that we truly have a world-class leadership team on deck within my shop at this point. The four items here, I'll cover those off on individual slides going forward. First one about capital. George mentioned the kind of capital investment that we're bringing to bear. With the transformation and the strategy that we've got on deck, we certainly needed to invest. It's an area that historically had not seen the kind of investment that we would have had within our wired networks, and this really has helped us as we move forward. Also, to let you know, I've got a granular plan for the next 24 months that can use every dollar of capital that we can put into this space. And lastly here, the return that we get from this capital is amongst the very best from any investment opportunity for our business as we go through. A little bit about execution. The key point here, as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, was there was a real cost focus historically. You know, manage the cost, what can we do for a little bit less, where can we put things to manage that, and we've really turned it upside down. Quality is the key driver now. And the question is always, will this help our quality? What can it drive for us?
great. It yields some terrific operating efficiencies that come through otherwise. Literally as well, there's probably thousands of things we've improved over the last 2 years as we've driven this agenda and gotten very good at understanding what's going on. We see continued opportunity here. You saw that in the OPEX slide as well. Complexity. Complexity is a real challenge for our business. This is one example around the billing side. So a double click on the $140 million. Of that, about $50 million goes into billing simplification annually. And in doing so, there are tremendous opportunities there. You know, one of the great things about having a company that's been around for 132 years is the strength, the brand, the quality. The challenge is we have some legacy systems. And this kind of investment is one that yields great returns for us and has been our Achilles heel over time. So you can see the kind of investment. We see that as a terrific ROI for us and one that will sustain for the next little while. E-ecosystems, probably a term that most don't use. And I find it to be a much more interesting term to describe what most others call self-service. And I'll tell you why I use this term. I find self-service really lacks the creativity and breadth of what we want to accomplish in this space. This is an unlimited canvas for us to create amazing experiences at a lower cost than before, and it's a huge point of focus for us. George showed you a little bit about the Mobility MCare, a mobile care plan, and this was launched last year. We're very proud of this. You know, the kind of results we created were terrific, and the learning we get in terms of how customers want to interact with us. It's not as if you need a delayed sequence to figure out is it working or not. You know within minutes and hours as to what you delivered, what worked well, and then you have a learning loop to improve that as well. You know, be it e-care, mobile care, care via Fibe TV, which is an advantage of that platform that we'll certainly leverage, you know, care via chat interactions in a multimedia space. There's nothing that we can't do within this ecosystem to deliver great experiences more cost effectively. One additional point building on what George mentioned regarding the CRTC's draft code of conduct for the wireless business. You know, we've already been driving most of the agenda items that they've identified, and we've been driving them proactively because they just make sense. You know, bottom line is that millions of customers today, over millions of times, have been able to check their data usage, adjust it, you know, buy additional packages, buy roaming packages, change their rate plan on the device they carry around on their hip since the middle of last year. And we think that truly is a customer-friendly agenda. Business intelligence. It's a bit of a fun slide. So the Harvard Business Review had some fun with this hot topic. They're not usually known for humor, by calling data scientists the sexiest job of the 21st century. So, you know, essentially the math and comp sci data quants are referred to as sexy. Now, big data, it will likely become one of the most overused and misunderstood terms of this decade. You can count on that. For me, the core benefit in this space is allowing our business to learn faster than the competition. Simple as that. And that's one customer at a time we're able to do that. This is something I've dreamed about for about 15 years, and it's now a reality based on the software and hardware that's out there. You know, it comes down to insight and math. We measure absolutely everything. You know, massive amounts of activity. The challenge was always to know how to make sense of it. What's the cause and effect relationship when you have billions of bits of data roaming around? And we've done a really good job driving into this space and creating understanding very quickly. And on to my last slide. Having a little bit of fun with an ad that Wade recently ran to launch our unlimited internet offering. You know, if you ask Marianne and I what the future looks like, we'd say that our opportunity to improve cost and quality is almost unlimited. You know, on my side, in a little over 2 years, we've created a wonderful result, wonderful improvements in all operating costs, improvements in churn, improvement in all quality metrics, and we're 2 years into a 5-year plan. There's an awful lot of goodness yet to come, and you can see that in the CAGR for 13. I think with Marianne and I, we've delivered greater improvements than any telco over the last 2 years, bar none. There was a recent article that stated your brand is nothing more than a promise consistently kept. And we think about that every day. How do we ensure 200 million interactions across every channel, every service, every product are as close to perfect to the brand promise that Wade's making? And I think we're well on our way to making that happen based on this. So thank you. That brings my presentation to a close. I believe we've got a 15-minute break. And thanks for join the presentation. Thank you.
If you can find your seats, we're going to get started in a minute. Are we good to go? Good to go. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for staying through the break. My name is Wade Osterman, and as the slide says, these are the things I manage for Bell. And really, my job is to manage our pick-a-screen, fill-it-with-goodness trademark kind of approach to the market as a whole. And the pieces of the business that I manage each play a role in delivering that promise to the market. And you should ask, well, why do you have that view on the market? And it's because we can see very clearly a change in the market where people are becoming less focused on product-centric attributes and care more about the ability to complete the activity they're interested in. So, I want to watch whatever it is I want to watch on the screen of my choice, and that's one of the reasons why we're structured the way we are, to enable that. So as I said, my role is to make that happen. Of course, it's my role and the role of every presenter that is in front of you today to kind of deliver that to the market. Today, however, I'll focus primarily on the wireless aspect of that puzzle. And George and Seema have already walked you through the Q4 results as did our release and the 2012 results, gave you some insight into our thinking on 2013, although I'll get into some more detail. And you will have seen from those results that really the wireless team and the teams that enable the wireless group are all delivering at world-class levels, and we're certainly incredibly pleased with the performance in 2012 and certainly since 08 and the change in management, and then since 09, the launch of our new network. So we've seen very positive performance improvement, and so what I thought I would do is talk about What do we think for 2013 and beyond, and do we see a path to continue that? And I think it's important to note George's six key strategic imperatives, and you will note on wireless it continues to say accelerate wireless, which certainly does not imply a lack of confidence in our plans there. So let me begin with the industry as a whole, and I think we're fairly fortunate in Canada. We have some outstanding industry fundamentals. Our penetration rate has lots and lots of runway, as you can see from the slide above. Our data as a percent of ARPU, again, lots of runway. And in fact, if you look at it carefully, you might even say there should be some pricing power there to come. And then I think very important for us and all of you in the room, the percent of smartphones in our postpaid base, which is ahead of markets that are much older than Canada's market, Europe and the U.S., that high percent is reflective of the incredible networks that we enjoy in this country. And those networks, make no mistake, drive an ecosystem that favors us because the more smartphones there are, which device manufacturers make to take advantage of the great networks, the more you get the app ecosystem chugging along, the more you get usage, the more you get ARPU growth. So all of those fundamentals are a very positive piece of the puzzle for us as we go forward. But so good industry fundamentals, what about Bell? Well, Bell even better. And there are some things in here that, while not specific to wireless, help us achieve the results we do in wireless. So we are the only national wireless and TV provider. Now that's important because video really drives a lot of utilization and utility in the wireless space. So the fact that we get that halo impact is important to us. We have, as you all know, a fairly significant cost advantage due to our network sharing agreement. But if I take a look at our network total, so wireline plus wireless, our purchasing power gives us some cost advantages. The high visibility of our other products in the residential space, so five rollout on both internet and TV, delivers the same kind of halo effect. George talked about the source, and we have, you know, the largest small box retail footprints in the country, and again, that is an important thing for us. We have the largest B2B, so business-to-business sales force in wireless in Canada, and our results in business continue to grow year over year, quarter over quarter. We're really doing a good job there. And of course, but very unusual, I would say we're probably the only one of the big three that can say this, we have new geographic markets ahead of us, and that is an advantage for us. And, you know, how all those pieces fit together is probably best demonstrated how we leverage the totality of Bell and really make the whole greater than the sum of the parts can probably be demonstrated nicely by telling you a little bit about Target. Target is a large retailer. They had an ambition and are coming to Canada. And as part of that, they, of course, want to be in wireless. And their goal coming in was to carry all carriers, all products, you know, have the new entrants, the existing established players, all of them in their locations. And for those who don't know, 125 stores coming up. So we thought, well, that's not as good for us if they, you know, our goal would be to have you only choose Bell, obviously. But so we used every element of the total Bell family to kind of talk to them about what they should do from a distribution perspective in Canada. And you take something like we own the source, you would think that would be a disadvantage. But we went to them and said, look, our training program has been tailored for organizations that are multi-SKU organizations that have products outside of just wireless, and how do you make all that work? So our ownership of the source, where we have to develop the same kind of training programs, helped us. We went with Bell Media. People, you know, sometimes ask, well, how do all these pieces fit together? We went with Bell Media and said, we can help you get established in Canada through our breadth and reach on the Bell Media side. We talked about, from our enterprise group, the connectivity solutions we provide. So we put together a total value proposition for them. They ended up selecting Glentel as their distribution manager for wireless in Canada. You all know that Glentel only carries us and Rogers. So a real win for us in wireless, but leveraging the total Bell assets to make that happen. So some great advantages to us as an organization. But I know you're all familiar with the sort of four metrics that drive value in wireless, and we deploy the assets I just mentioned to really make positive progress on each of these four. I know you know what they all are, so what I thought I would do is dive a little bit deeper on each of them and tell you why we are confident that we'll be able to hit and achieve the financial targets set out by Seema and George. So let me begin with ARPU. You know, ultimately we drive superior ARPU performance by changing our mix. And that's actually a pretty important point. We do not need to use premium pricing to achieve superior ARPU results. If we use superior or, you know, premium pricing, it would call into question perhaps our the competitiveness of our value proposition. We do not need to do that. We simply have to go improve our performance in the naturally higher ARPU segments. And they're fairly obvious. The West, not our historical strength, business, given that we were not a GSM organization several years ago, tougher to get at those business clients and the roaming revenues that come with that, all those things we were restricted from, or, you know, tougher for us to compete in those segments. So simply having the right solution set and simply having the focus on improving our distribution in the West, for example, allows us to gain share in segments that have higher ARPUs. And certainly our plan is to continue that as we go forward. We, you know, a good example of what's happening in that space is what's happening on data ARPU. All carriers are experiencing wireless data growth. We're no exception. The factors that drive data ARPU are consistent, but They are ecosystem drivers. It's nothing that we particularly have to do. It's happening naturally. We just have to execute better than our competitors to perform better in that space. And again, adding that to our mixed profile change, we see really positive outcomes. We do see, as I said, that the smartphone acceleration continuing for next year. We expect to end 2013 at about the 75% level. The only way we grow the total embedded base is, of course, a number higher than that of new sales are taking smartphones. We see that taking place. And all of that is driving, as I said, that data ecosystem, more apps, more functionality, more usage, more ARPU. And that's continuing. A perfect example of that is mobile TV, where Bell is an unquestioned leader in the space, with now 30-plus live TV channels. And you see the 49ers, San Francisco 49ers in the middle screen there, and that's, of course, representing this year's Super Bowl. And I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about some of the stats that came out of that to show you the kind of size and scope of the opportunity. But our Super Bowl viewership this year was up 100% over the Super Bowl viewership last year. It's a pretty cool number. It was up 80% over the London Olympics just this past August. It was up 50%, so that's the kind of growth rates we're seeing, since the Grey Cup at the end of November. So incredible growth in adoption by consumers. And I'm quite frankly amazed that our competitors keep letting us run the ball up the field on them uncontested in this space, but I'm thankful they do, because we're going to be at 1 million mobile TV subs by the end of 2013, and they contribute to our ARPU performance. So, you know, some very positive and I would say relatively risk-free attributes that make me very comfortable we're going to achieve continued ARPU growth as we go forward. Next, subs, you know, a share of postpaid nets, and we're targeting 33%. And how do we do that? Well, it begins with distribution. You know, we talked a lot about we already have a very significant distribution advantage, and we just reached that deal with Target, which, again, is now a two-player game instead of a nine-player game in that channel. So we are far and away number one in distribution strength in the country. Our brand, fifth most valuable brand in Canada, the only non-bank in the top five, number one in that space. Handsets, we have the number one handset lineup in the country, and you can just go to one of our retail stores and our competitors and prove that to yourself. The way we get that lead is, again, to leverage a Bell assets that's not obvious. But if you think about who the handset suppliers are, they have other electronics products that they make, TVs, laptops, digital cameras, you name it. And so when we can go to them and say, look, we can help you with those other product lines with our group called The Source, their interest in working with us on the handset side goes up. So we leverage those relationships, we leverage the Bell assets to gain a competitive advantage in wireless on the handset side. Network, we talked about that a lot, but we obviously have the number one network in the organization. We do support all this with a superior level of end-user support, and John talked about a 310% increase in net promoter score, and that drives sales, make no mistake about it. So we see that as a positive contributor. And then last on my list of five, but new geographic markets. You know, interestingly, we just launched in Manitoba in the second half of 2012. That's a market Bell had never sold Bell-branded products before. And it's a pretty good market. 1.3 million pops, 900,000 subs, 500,000 or so of those with MTS. Now, you know our appetite. A third. You know, our asset portfolio, like, pretty tough to compete with that as a player there. So will we be successful in our ambition? 100%. We will use the totality of the Bell asset mix to achieve the goals we set out for ourselves in each and every market in which we compete. But for you, the important point is it's a market we've never competed in. So what is our ability, and you judge for yourself, what's our ability to drive positive results on the sales side in that market? Lower churn, well, our investment in retention is absolutely showing results, and John made the point that our churn levels are down. Our churn levels, though, are not just down. They dropped more than any other competitor we compete with. And they did that while we spent less than any other competitor we compete with. So very significant efficiency at work there. But because of the ability to leverage the other elements of Bell, because of our brand strength, our handset lineup, our distribution strength, and therefore the ability to service people in more locations closer to where they live, we are entirely comfortable that targeting that sort of COM level of 10 to 11% will allow us to achieve the goals we have in place for our efforts on churn. So we are very comfortable with that number, as we are on the capital side. You know, we do, I did talk about the cost advantage we gained because we have the network sharing agreement. LTE is a lower cost infrastructure, lower cost to operate and carry traffic than alternatives, and as we keep rolling out LTE, that is a positive thing for us. It helps us manage the increase in data consumption, right, because we can clearly see that happening, and Steve and Hal will touch more on that. We do continue to benefit from our backhaul facilities through our landline part of the house. So in total, we think, when we look at it, that sort of 10 to 13% for the medium and beyond 2013 is going to be just fine for us to support all the things we need to do to continue to be a superior player in the market. Now, of course, this is wireless, and so I'd be completely remiss if I didn't talk about some of the more exciting things that are happening in our space. But it begins with, if we execute, and I have every confidence that we will, it's very clear to me that we will be able to achieve the financials we set out, and that drives improved margin performance. And that happens through that ability to drive revenue growth, which I talked about, and, of course, the continued focus on cost control. And that comes through being really disciplined. It's just that simple. Our strategy is not to be the leader on price reductions, though it's good to know with our cost structure, if that were to happen, we'd be okay. But it's not our goal to lead down pricing. So we were very disciplined about what we follow and what we don't follow in the market. Because of our leverage with handset suppliers, we're able to secure devices that we don't need to compete on price on because they're exclusive to us. So all those things let us really manage the cost side fine. And so that increased margin lets us then invest, as I said, in things that make wireless a pretty exciting place to be. You know, you would have seen, for example, that Facebook announced last week that more people now access Facebook through a wireless device than not. It's a pretty remarkable thing to have happened. And it speaks to what you all have to have in place to make that happen. The networks, the handsets, the rate plans, everything has to sort of enable end users to do that. But the innate orientation is to do precisely that. And John talked about the importance of everything. And what I think gets lost, perhaps, is the structural advantage we have in getting all the benefits of an e-enabled ecosystem. Most organizations have to spend not an inconsiderable amount of money to get people's digital addresses. We have it. It's their phone number. It costs us nothing to get it. We get it when they sign up. It's their internet IP address when they sign up. It's their television IP address when they sign up. So I have a huge structural advantage in just having the data available to leverage all the cost efficiencies of the, call it, e-everything world. And that's something that we push hard every single day. 4 years ago now, I think, when we went to e-bill as our default, the results we've seen in that space are just phenomenal. It's taken out huge, huge amounts of cost and allowed us to generate some additional revenues. Wi-Fi, VoIP or VoLTE, voice over LTE, unlimited pricing, all those things do important work for us. They lower costs and drive appeal of our product set. They shelter us from exposure in some cases. So all of that drives positive fundamentals for the business. Mobile commerce, we just signed our first financial institution, and this is through Endstream. Endstream is, of course, the joint venture Bell, TELUS, and Rogers, and that's important. We're working with every bank, trying to put in place an ecosystem, again, that will, regardless of handset you carry, regardless of financial institution you do business with, and regardless of carrier you do business with, will be a common UI, a common way to interact, and a common way to complete a financial transaction. That commonality will drive adoption at a much greater rate than if every time you switch banks, handsets, or carriers, you have to learn a new way to do it. So we're very excited about that, and as I said, Endstream just signed its first financial institution to enable that. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. You know, lots of things still have to happen, but it's all coming together. And so that's a really nice upside for the business. Big data, just such a massive opportunity, and particularly for an organization like us. We just signed an agreement with an insurance company, so a little bit big data, a little bit machine-to-machine, where the insurance company will offer discounts to drivers, not based on a predictive model, but based on actual driving experience. And so, yes, you will have a widget in your car, and yes, it will notice whether or not you stopped completely at the stop sign like you were supposed to, or you were speeding. It's all voluntary, don't worry. I know I won't let it near my car, but think of what that does. That insurance company benefits because their mix now moves towards a lower risk profile client. That's good for their ambition. And of course for us, it drives data traffic on our network, machine to machine connectivity and all those things. So there's a small example of it all coming together. So, it has a tremendous amount of positive energy in the space. We're excited about our ability to compete in it. We are very comfortable that our brand promise, which is today just got better, will in fact turn out to be correct. And it gives us comfort as we look out that and at the inevitability of this multi-screen environment coming together, that we have the right momentum going forward into 2013. Not just the right momentum, the right assets in place to achieve the financial objectives we have. And frankly, I have that same sense of excitement, the same sense of optimism on the landline side of the house when I think about all the positive steps we're taking there. So all of this will be an achievement of our goal, and that goal, of course, is to be Canada's leading communications company. Now, the person who has to make all this happen and make all the technology work is up next. So, Stephen, if you could come up. Thank you.
Thanks, Wade. My name is Stephen Howe. I'm responsible for the operations, strategy, and implementation of our various networks at Bell. Bell's networks are really the foundation of everything we do at the company, a bit of a biased opinion perhaps, but nonetheless I believe it's true. And I do apologize in advance if I lose a few of you on acronyms. I've tried to keep it to a minimum for you today. As far as network strategy, this is really an aspirational view of the types of things we're trying to do. Really we have one core, world-class core network. That's the cloud you see. And around the exterior, we have all our connections into that network, whether it's fiber, Wi-Fi, copper, LTE, or HSPA. And so convergence is really happening. We've already, on my team, converged and consolidated our wireless and wireline operations team, the team that manages that core. And, of course, all of our cell sites, where possible, we actually backhaul using our fiber assets. So really, anywhere, anytime, seamless network experience is what we're driving towards. And let me give you one kind of simple example, and something that actually interlaps today, and I've experienced it myself. So you're watching Five TV, And this will happen this year. You're watching Five TV, and it's Saturday morning, and you need to be brunch at the mother-in-law's. And right when you need to be to get into the car, right, you're right in the middle of the Sports Center Top 10. Right, you don't want to miss it. And so the great thing you can do is you pause right there in your Five TV. You pause that feed. You get in the minivan. Put the kids in the minivan. You slap up an iPad. You press play on that iPad. And right from where you press pause, you're able to watch the rest of Sports Center Top 10. Pretty powerful stuff. And that's all done by the core network, the intelligence within our context, content, and our applications in our core. Now, how are we executing on this strategy? We really have a three-prong approach. On the wireline side, we're continuing to drive FTTX, which stands for fiber to the X, whether it's to the node or the home or the suite, and of course IPTV deployment that George talked about earlier. On wireless, further expanding our LTE network. In fact, we will have coverage to 98% of our population in Canada by the end of 2015. And all the while keeping up with demand, and I'll take you through some of the demand charts. And we do this by keeping within the 16 to 17% C to I that Seem and George both talked about. Canada absolutely runs on Bell. You can see 96 of the top 100 companies in Canada, but really, in particular, our business customers count on us 24/7, 365 days a year to keep the networks up and running for their customers. I can really kind of pause and take you through this chart because it's a little busy, but we're really driving across four key elements, our fiber to the homes and businesses strategy. Fiber to the neighborhood, that's what we call FTTN, fiber to the node. We're continuing to bring that to as close to the customer as possible. The closer you have the node in that neighborhood, the better your performance and speeds are. We're doing pair bonding, which George talked a little bit about. What pair bonding is taking two copper pairs, putting them together to essentially double the speeds. That doubles the speeds for the user. It also increases our footprint, like George mentioned, from 900 meters from that node to 1.4 kilometers with that node. And so we'll get 130,000 additional IPTV-capable homes in our footprint by implementing this technology. We have it in the field today in test, and it'll be available to our customers later this year. Fiber to the home, we of course launched Quebec City. It was the biggest implementation in all of Canada with fiber to the home. Also, all new greenfields, any new subdivision that's being built today is being built directly with fiber to the home. And any aerial plant, so we have access to the telephone poles, we're putting fiber to the home as well. And those are areas like the North Shore, South Shore of Montreal, Laval, and so on today. And by the end of the year, we'll have actually more than 10% of our coverage done with fiber to the home. Similarly, fiber to the condo, we are driving 1,200. We have 1,200 MDUs right now with fiber either directly into the basement or in some cases as a new condo, we're actually building fiber directly to the suite. And fiber to the business, absolutely, of course, we're big into the business. We have 135,000 locations available today with fiber directly to those locations, and we have an ongoing proactive fiber build for any major businesses, data centers, and so on. So what does this look like from a footprint perspective? So 71% of our homes will have access to high-speed FTTX internet, and 60% of our homes in footprint will have access to IPTV. That's roughly about 5 million, a little more than 5 million homes, and 4.3 million homes respectively. And of course, we have wireless broadband right across the country. I'll talk about wireless in a minute. And satellite TV, of course, they're available in our footprint. That's 40% of the footprint, plus the rest, coast to coast to coast. We have the best performing satellite fleet in the industry. So altogether, with a combination of our network assets, we're driving the best speeds and services to Canadians. You know, there's a lot of hype about feeds and speeds, and you always, you know, get these larger and larger and larger numbers. But let me really kind of bake it a little bit in reality for you a little bit today. First off, these are all dedicated speeds, not shared speeds, absolutely dedicated speeds directly to the home or directly to the business. Second, you'll notice The average home usage is pretty low compared to what we can deliver. In fact, nearly 100% of our customers use less than 10 megabits per second on peak. And so you can see at today's technology, at 35 megabits per second, a lot of headroom. And with bonding, doubling the speed, we'll be able to grow that even more, of course. Fiber to the home on the right side of this slide is really a future-proof, I'll put that in quotes, technology. We're offering speeds up to 175 megabits per second in Quebec City and Greenfields today. And that'll grow to well over a gig in the future. So what does this look like from a driving capacity perspective? A huge growth. We are growing on our wireline network about 40% year over year. You can see this chart. This actually shows the seasonal effect that we see. Of course, people surf the internet more in the winter, watch more things in the winter than they do in the summer, and that's the spikes you can see as they grow through the years. But we have absolutely Canada's largest 100 gig backbone network. It is future-proof with fiber. And our team manages tens of thousands of circuits on every 15-minute increments that we understand where capacity hits are happening. We have a proactive 18-month plan on how we manage that growth. Very similar on the wireless side, we do the same type of proactive management growth. And turning to wireless, and you've heard it a couple times today, and yeah, I'm a little biased, but it is absolutely one of the most advanced networks in the world, bar none. It actually rides, of course, on our core network. Again, back to that aspirational slide I showed earlier, all of our sites, 75% of our sites, run on our fiber backbone, and everything else ultimately hits our core. We have speeds. 98% of the population has access to speeds to 21 megabits per second. About 85% of the population has access to speeds to 42 megabits per second on HSPA. And LTE, which provides speeds up to 75 megabits per second, is going to be available to 75% of the population by the end of the year. It's available to 68% of the population today. And that's really focused on urban and suburban environments. We're awaiting the 700 megahertz auction, as has been discussed earlier, to really deploy the rest of the country in a rural kind of setting. Why 700 megahertz for rural? One, it propagates further so you can get farther distances. But the other great thing about 700 megahertz spectrum is it also penetrates buildings much better. So for in-building penetration, for those on Blackberries and iPhones and like that in the conference today, you'll be able to get even better penetration. And of course, we share this network with TELUS, initial upfront capital savings, but ongoing capital and OPEX savings as well. We have roaming to 225 countries across the world. That is the largest of any Canadian provider today. Some of the innovative things we're doing on the wireless side, we continue to build cell sites. Why do we continue to build cell sites? To keep up, add additional coverage, quality into the network, and capacity improvements. This slide shows an example of one of our very innovative for a sensitive area, Muskoka. For anybody that's been up in Muskoka, quite a sensitive area. Big cottages, big lakes. We actually deployed a number of these Muskoka pine trees. This is an actual fake tree with our infrastructure in it. The core is about this big. It's about a 100-foot tall tree. It's well hidden. This is taken from one of the roads that we actually built to the tree. And so it's well hidden from the 400 or the 69 series of highways, depending on which way you go up to Muskoka. But our technicians actually go within the trunk of the tree. There's a ladder in order to add antennas and check on cabling and things of that nature. We continue to complement the cell site build with a number of cost-effective strategies. You've probably heard other carriers talking about that, particularly AT&T. Small cell sites. We are implementing, this is an actual picture of one of our cell sites in the Port Credit area. And we have public and private in-building systems that we're driving deeper and deeper penetration into significant buildings, as well as a big strategic Wi-Fi deployment that I'll talk about. And we absolutely plan to deliver with 700 megahertz spectrum broadband wireless to all Canadians by 2015. On Wi-Fi, really we are in a unique position. Wade talked a little bit about it, but we're in an absolutely unique position with Wi-Fi, with all of our Wi-Fi assets, whether that's in the home, in businesses, or some of these examples here. We do have a managed Wi-Fi service that we provide to McDonald's, Tim Hortons, and Chapters Indigo, among others. We also do public deployments. I've listed a few here. We do have the largest Wi-Fi network across Canada, Mississauga Beach, Boulevard Saint Laurent, and for those bikers in the crowd, Friday the 13th, Port Dover, we actually have Wi-Fi in the center of town to offload any of the traffic that happens on the various Friday the 13th celebration. And all of this is managed through our core network. Again, recall back to the cloud slide. Everything is managed within context. So if you're in Port Dover on Friday the 13th, and we're experiencing a high level of traffic, you naturally migrate from an LTE network or HSPA network onto the Wi-Fi network. You don't have to register. You don't even know you're on it. You're still getting access to the internet and content applications very seamlessly. On the enterprise side, we build and operate thousands of private networks. And so you can imagine one day walking into, I don't know, BMO branch and handing off from the LTE network or HSPA network again in a seamless fashion onto that local Wi-Fi hotspot. Those are the things we're working on as we speak. As far as speeds and speeds, you know, pretty incredible development. We follow the global ecosystem. This is similar to any other chart that you would see. So there's nothing new, but we do have even LTE Advanced in our labs as we speak. LTE at 10 megahertz, that's what we're offering today, speeds up to 75 megabits per second. I've experienced over 100 megabits per second myself, and we've demonstrated it. LTE Advanced really brings a further improvement in quality of the connection, in the cost per bit. So we think as we drive that kind of traffic, we're trying to improve our cost per bit trajectory on delivering services. It also does something called carrier aggregation, which allows us to use the full spectrum suite that we have, which we'll talk about shortly, and self-optimizing network, which really allows us to gain more efficiency in my RF engineering field force. All of this will be really fully realized in 2015. So we absolutely have the spectrum, the vendor partnerships, and the global ecosystem in place for us to take advantage of things much like LTE Advanced. So with all these speeds, you know, how's the network keeping up? We experienced 100% year-over-year growth. I'm sure you guys all wish this was a revenue growth chart, but it is a traffic growth chart. We deliver about 1 billion text messages a week, which is an incredible number when you think about it. In fact, New Year's Eve is one of our biggest, it is in fact our biggest text messaging. We sent about 8,200 text messages a second over the New Year's Eve time frame for that sort of 3-hour window from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. And like I mentioned on the wireline side, we are absolutely very, very tight on our 18-month proactive rolling capacity plan. We track thousands of nodes across our network. We are driving more and more traffic to LTE, which is a fundamental game changer as far as cost per bit is concerned. So I'm very confident in our ability to manage on an ongoing basis the wireless business between a 10 to 13% CDI. Spectrum, as mentioned previously, we'll absolutely participate in the 700 megahertz auction. Why is that important? It's important for rural internet use. It's also important for the in-building, like I mentioned. And when you look at our spectrum position relative to any other major players in North America, we're at par or better than them with our asset pool. More spectrum, of course, means higher speeds, more capacity, and significant broadband benefits for all Canadians. And I'd be remiss if I didn't have a cost structure chart. And last but certainly not least, we absolutely, on the network team, have a culture of driving out costs and improving productivity. And much like Marianne and both John said, there's no silver bullet here. It's a lot of block and tackle. We have a multi-vendor strategy where we use those vendors against each other to drive costs out. We're putting more and more bits on our newer technologies, whether that's FTTH, FTTN, or LTE. And the more we increase our fiber footprint, of course, the better our cost structure gets, because it's a passive technology. There's no electronics in the field, and fiber is quote-unquote future-proof. In a labor strategy, we've driven about 650 folks out of the team over the last 5 years. Synergies in team consolidation, a lot of systems and processes and productivity tools that we've put in place to manage the growth while overall reducing our costs. So in summary, I believe we're absolutely successfully executing our network strategy. You can see it there. And we're absolutely staying within the 16 to 17% that both George and C mentioned. Thank you. And with that, we're going to run a short video just before Kevin gets on stage. Thanks.
3, 2, 1.
Hey, Canada, you've watched the amazing race. Now it's time to join the competition.
CTV Morning Live.
Good evening. Here are the stories making news tonight.
Hey, he's strutting around like he's 5'6".
How do you do, Madonna? Ben Mulrooney.
I love you.
Three bodies were found murdered in the last 6 hours.
There's always a motive, and I'm going to find it.
Liquidity continues to fuel the market.
This is Toronto's breaking news, evening 24.
How about that by DeRozan?
My name's on the door. My ass is on the line.
How much trouble are we in?
When did I become a
man? I don't have a nuclear weapon. Wink, wink.
The Canadian government has fallen!
An American prisoner of war has been turned.
Nobody lives forever. Wouldn't have it any other way.
I wouldn't be here without you guys. You guys are amazing. I love you.
Are you pregnant?
We cool down around here, and he falls.
Oh my God.
This show's a joke.
Come on, then. Roger, get on now.
Back to you.
Big morning with Holly at 10:50. Mike Richards of the morning.
Well, good morning, all, and coming up here last this morning, I think you can probably see why it is such a privilege to be a part of this management team. And at a little bit of personal risk, I'll take exception with one thing that George said. We're not all boring. Boring has been great for shareholders so far, but I'm here to tell you this morning why not boring is also great for shareholders. Our job at Bell Media is to entertain, inform, and inspire Canadians better than anyone else in this business. That way, Canadians will spend more and more time on our properties like you just saw in that video. I think that's a great illustration of how we do that today. But looking forward, one thing is clear. This business is changing fast. We think the media business has an outstanding future, and we think that we're very well positioned. Every week, Canadians spend 28 hours in front of their television, 4 hours with online video, and a half an hour with mobile video. That's 5 hours a day consuming video. The way I see it, even if you allow for 8 hours of sleep every night, we still have a long way to grow. It's been a privilege to be a part of the Bell Media leadership team for the last 2.5 years, and I'm excited to talk today about the amazing people, the great assets, and mostly about our progress and our vision. Prior to the acquisition, CTV had assembled some of the best media assets in Canada, and since then, we've made them better. CTV, the conventional network, has been number one for a record-breaking 11 years, and CTV, the brand, is the highest-value television brand in the country. Sports programming, given its live event nature and its ability to draw huge and passionate audiences, makes it a sweet spot in the industry. TSN and RDS are synonymous with sports television across Canada in both English and French. Non-sports specialty delivers targeted demographics that advertisers crave. For example, a passionate youth audience has made Much Music the number one liked brand in Canada with more than 1.4 million likes. With 33 radio stations in 14 markets across Canada, the industry's best sports radio portfolio, our radio asset is delivering revenue and cash flow growth while complementing the rest of our assets with great content and great talent. In digital media, our strength provides evidence that great content wins on any screen, as technology enhances the content experience by making it available on beautiful screens of any size, anywhere, and on demand. The value and the competitive advantage of great content has never mattered more, and we can't ignore social. Thanks to social media, we're witnessing a revival of appointment viewing, where the water cooler is real-time and it's global. It reinforces the need for everybody to keep up with popular programs. Bell Media will continue to innovate, invest, and lead in social and co-viewing execution. Now, it may sound cliche, but our real competitive advantage is our people, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera or the mic. We're blessed to have award-winning talent across the portfolio. We have three Order of Canada recipients currently on air, with Lloyd Robertson, Craig Oliver, and Brian Williams. Our talents show versatility and range, and we have a number of rising stars, like Omar Sachedino on National News and Michelle Dubé on CFTO right here in Toronto. In fact, since Michelle joined Ken Shaw on the anchor desk, our ratings on CFTO's evening news are up 42%. No doubt this audience is familiar with Howard Green and Catherine Murray, who are key parts of a refreshed and a revitalized BNN. In sports, Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole have become wildly popular, bringing humor and irreverence to their late-night Sports Center show. Leah Miller, Ben Mulrooney, and, of course, Marilyn Dennis share their talent across several programs and on several properties every day on Bell Media. The Bell Media star system is something that we cultivate, we cherish, and we will continue to invest in. Our objectives are pretty straightforward. We're here to make these assets even stronger and to create a great and lasting media business in the new media environment. To do this, we'll build and grow our audiences, we'll monetize those audiences, and importantly, we will create known more of our own content, ensuring that Canadian attitudes, opinions, values, and our immense artistic creativity are reflected in our programming and in our coverage of events at home and around the world. The audience that we deliver for advertisers is truly unmatched in this country. Advertisers value and they continue to pay for reach or the ability to instantly get a message out to millions and millions of Canadians in a way that engages the audience and complements their brand value with great quality content. As you can see here, across our portfolio, we're able to deliver an impressive number of Canadians many times every day. Frequency is another important metric for advertisers. And since the average Canadian spends almost 2 hours a day with Bell Media, we don't just deliver reach, but we also deliver frequency. Our advertisers find their audience, whether they're in the family room, in their car, on the go with a smartphone or a tablet, or whether they're on their computer, whether they're watching or listening to sports, news, or entertainment. Integrated multi-platform campaigns can really make 1 + 1 = 3 for our advertisers, and we'll continue to innovate and serve our clients in that way. But it's not just about quantity. It's also about the quality of our audience that matters. Thanks to the breadth of our portfolio, we can deliver the industry's largest audience across all demographic segments. Advertisers can reach men and women of any age. They can reach the affluent, the educated, and decision makers in both business and residential households. We know that targeting, measurability, and efficiency are critical to advertisers, and we're driving this business to deliver on their needs today as well as tomorrow. It's this attitude and our execution that are allowing us to monetize these huge audiences. Here you can see that even in a tough macro environment for advertising, we've been able to drive solid top-line growth. Revenue was up 7% to $2.2 billion in 2012, with the Olympics delivering just under $100 million of that. We would anticipate that with the size and the quality of the audience that I just talked about, and equally important with the strength of our sales team, that we're very well positioned for the inevitable cyclical recovery in advertising. Moving over to EBITDA performance, what you see here is the effect of two key things. First, great execution by a team who remain immensely focused on creating shareholder value with these assets. But second, integration with Bell and really bringing the Bell mindset of cost control and productivity to our operations. We've fully integrated engineering and network, IT, and all of our corporate functions with Bell. This, along with internal synergies of our reorganization, has reduced our senior management team by 30% since the acquisition. Here you can see the trailing 12 months before we announced the acquisition in 2010. This business at that time ran at a 17% EBITDA margin. We've been able to take that up to 28%, and as Seem said earlier, almost double the absolute EBITDA dollars, all while running at a very low C to I or capital intensity, and more significantly, all while investing for our future. Speaking of execution, here's a clear illustration that even when we enjoy a leading position in the market, we were able to further grow our revenue share in 2012. This is also illustrated in our advertising revenue to audience ratio. Here we're well above 100% in both television and radio. This means that our share of revenue exceeds our share of audience in each of those categories. It also means that our sales teams are adding value to advertisers through integrated campaigns and brand partnerships, and that our programming and production teams are delivering content that attract not just huge audiences, but also the right audience. And now to our third objective. Creating and owning more of our content is good for our business. We've had a great success with recent in-house productions as well as independently produced programs, as some of the following examples illustrate. Just this last Sunday, following the Super Bowl, we premiered Motive, a breakthrough twist on the police procedural. This show delivered a record-breaking audience, even though a 35-minute power outage caused it to not air until 11 p.m. Our tribute to the Canadian Football League through an 8-part documentary series called Engraved on a Nation was both a critical and an audience success, drawing more than 8 million viewers in Canada. Discovery Canada generates international revenue from selling Daily Planet, which is our daily science program, along with other shows like Mighty Ships and Alien Mysteries. In-house produced events like the MMVAs, the Much Music Video Awards, have become a real core competency of our team. This one-of-a-kind ultra-urban outdoor blockbuster concert is deeply embraced by sponsors and by audiences alike. We're able to attract the very best pop talent in the world, and it's also a big win for Bell Media financially. Recognizing the strength of putting on these events, we created another one called The Big Jingle, which aired its premiere year in December of last year. We expect this to be an annual event. This delighted a live audience at the ACC. It drew over 2 million viewers and 6 fantastic sponsors that got behind it, including Virgin Mobile. Brand partnerships is our sales team who work with ad clients to create highly customized campaigns that include product placement, creative integration in programming, as well as program-relevant messaging in the ad itself. This is really the future of advertising, but demand for that kind of brand partnership far exceeds the supply. When we create and own more of our content where we control the writing and the production, that's how we grow supply. This kind of integration has already made Amazing Race Canada a financial success even before we go to air. Now I'd like to turn to performance highlights for each of our operating segments. Our flagship CTV is really a powerhouse in network television. We air 13 of the top 20 programs in Canada. We air the biggest comedy, the biggest reality show, the number one Canadian drama, the number one news, both nationally and in 9 of the top 12 local markets across Canada. Here you can see how we have successfully executed truly a once-in-a-generation transition on our national news anchor desk, with Lisa LaFlemme performing spectacularly. Plus, thanks to our carriage of big events like the Super Bowl, like the Oscars, and the Golden Globe Awards, in 2012, we aired 39 telecasts that delivered over 3 million viewers. The rest of the industry had 7. Our focus in 2013 is, of course, to maintain this ratings leadership, but we also intend to lead the industry in resolving structural challenges like distant signals and non-simultaneous substitution. Both of these will help us to better monetize our audiences. In a little bit, I'm going to talk about TV Everywhere. This is a key strategic pillar across all of our portfolio, and I'll get to that in a minute. Let me turn to sports. Sports are an important component of any media portfolio. Sports draw huge and attractive audiences. Sports broadcasting tells stories of courage, commitment, and achievement, something that brands all want to be associated with. And as it's frequently reported, it's real-time and PVR-proof. It's also perfect content for today's broadband mobile networks and devices. We're very proud of and we're very committed to the people who run our sports properties and to these assets themselves. Here you can see the strength of both TSN and RDS. And while the NHL season didn't get started right about when we expected or we wanted it to, thanks to the balanced strength of our schedule, our sales team was able to retain 87% of the hockey money that we missed during the lockout. In the last 14 months, we've added several key properties to our roster, like Premier League Soccer, Masters Golf, the FIFA World Cup, with the Women's World Cup here in 2015. Also in 2015, we'll be getting a much stronger lease schedule thanks to our MLSC investment, but we don't have to wait for TFC. This season, TSN will air 23 of their 34 games. Over to non-sports specialty. This is really a sweet spot in the industry, and it's been a key area of focus for our programming investment, and it's paying off. Our aggregate audience on non-sports specialty grew by 5% in 2012. That's faster than any ownership group in Canada other than Corus. We grew even faster with the coveted women 25 to 54 demographic. This was led by Bravo, where we totally revitalized the channel, and we drove audience growth of 40%, making it the fastest-growing specialty channel in Canada. And on March 6th, Bravo will premiere Season 1 of Homeland, the multi-award-winning Showtime thriller. Even before this blockbuster airs, four out of the top five non-sports specialty programs air on Bell Media properties. Five of the five do, four of them on Discovery, and the fifth in the top five is on our very own Space Channel. Let me turn to radio. Our radio portfolio had a great year in 2012. We grew revenue for the full year, and we took revenue market share in about half of our markets. Our program directors are expert at knowing their target audience and capturing them, as we are number one or number two for delivering the female audience in 10 out of the 14 markets where we operate. Radio is a stable and steady cash flow contributor with portfolio synergies across our television properties. On Bell Media Radio, you'll hear TSN Sports Updates, BNN Business Updates, and Lisa LaFlamme will regularly preview that evening's news on our channels. And finally, over to digital. Great content wins on any screen, on any platform, and in any time dimension. All the strength that I outlined on our linear platforms has translated into strength in digital viewing as well. Here you can see that in 2012, we delivered 1.7 billion videos. That's a video a week for each and every Canadian citizen. And it's more than every other media company in the country combined. This takes place on ctv.ca, on much.ca, on our other branded websites. Takes place on our mobile applications, as well as our mobile video platform that Wade talked about. We drive traffic to these digital platforms on our linear broadcasts and through innovative use of social media, loyalty programs, and bonus content. In addition, this year we rebranded and reprogrammed our general interest portal, which was called Simpatico, to be a lifestyle-oriented, multimedia-rich, and women's focused portal called The Loop. The first few months of execution with The Loop have exceeded our expectations, and this fall we're going to launch a companion television show called The Loop into an early afternoon time slot on CTV. Many of our new shows have extension online companion content. For example, Saving Hope, the number one Canadian drama of 2012, developed a large and engaged online following with extensive bonus content linked into the program and to the talent. Earlier, I talked about the strength of our talent. In fact, the social footprint of our brands and our personalities has hit 7.5 million unique followers, and that's up 30% in the last year. Our digital focus for 2013 is very much about TV everywhere. The explosion of viewing on tablets and smartphones has been well documented. With TV everywhere, now cable and telco distributors will be able to offer their consumers the very best content in Canada to satisfy this demand. It's important to note that this strategy supports the current television ecosystem, providing distributors with tremendous value enhancement to improve upsell and reduce churn on their BDU products. Our offering is comprehensive. In fact, it's the most comprehensive TV everywhere anywhere in North America. We provide live streaming, catch-up current season content, and prior season library content to any device over any network. We'll monetize this at Bell Media through three avenues. First, through advertising revenue, and eventually through dynamically inserted targeted advertising. Second, we'll monetize through penetration support for our specialty services. And third, from additional fees that we will charge to the distributors for these rights. We think that this TV Everywhere strategy, complemented by other broadcaster initiatives like HBO Go, provide an excellent response to OTT competition. There's no question that the industry dynamic has changed with OTT. Competition from huge global technology providers that you see here is already having an impact on our content availability and cost. These players have introduced fantastic user interfaces, ease of access, and they're growing the viewing market by facilitating new consumption habits like binge viewing. The great news is that the vast majority of this viewing has so far been complementary to the existing system. But we know we must respond, and we are. As I said at the opening, it's the content that matters no matter what screen, so we will continue building on our strength of producing and procuring the content that Canadians want, and we will introduce an authenticated TV Everywhere service, which leverages the customer base of our distribution partners and the promotional power of our CTV megaphone. And we'll make sure that the content available is more comprehensive than any OTT provider can offer, thanks in part to our Astral acquisition. Astral's specialty portfolio complements RDS in Quebec and significantly enhances our competitive position in French language programming. With these assets, we'll improve the stability of our revenue mix by reducing our reliance on cyclical advertising revenue, and especially on the conventional television segment. But as I suggested earlier, there's also a significant enhancement to our TV Everywhere strategy. You see, we believe that we can deliver a far superior package of content with TV Everywhere compared to what Netflix and others will deliver. With Astral, we will have primetime hits, past season and long-tail content, kids, sports, movies, news, and will be bilingual. Provided that customers still value their linear subscription, which is absolutely proving to be the case today, the incremental cost to the consumer of our four-screen, live, catch-up, and library will be less than OTT. Better product, lower cost. A win for the consumer, a win for the distributor, and a win for Bell Media. So in conclusion, build and grow audience, monetize the audience, and create known more of our own content. That's our winning strategy for the media business. And now I'd like to ask my colleagues to join. We're going to turn to Q&A session.
I got one. Good. Okay, so as the folks settle in, why don't we take questions for about 20 minutes or so. And if you have a question, we go to the microphone and we'll try to answer the question as best we can.
Hi, George. Hi, everyone. Hi. Question I have is on the dividend. So if you look at your 69% payout ratio, that includes a free cash guidance number that in, that itself includes a $200 million benefit from the solvency pension funding that you did last year. If you don't include that, and let's assume that that's not a recurring item, then that payout ratio moves up into the high end of the range. So the question I want to ask, and George, you made reference to this earlier, is you have a lot of comfort, you feel, for the free cash profile. I'm asking kind of post-2013, you know, if you can comment on a couple of things. Number one, you know, give us some context on what that comfort level is. And presumably that includes CapEx directions. Presumably that includes possibilities for pension solvency funding decreases. And then number two, if you can give us some guidance on your willingness to see the payout ratio go into that high end of the range, whether that's for a small period of time, while you're making these outsized investments in things like IPTV and LTE.
Okay, I'm going to ask Stephen Howe, the head of our technology, to answer that for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, first of all, I'd say I've been asked the same question for 5 years. The first answer is look at our results. We're generating free cash for growth of 5 to 9%, and that's what's giving us the headroom to grow the dividend. The guidance is around 2013, so again, I'm always a little careful to talk, you know, as everyone knows, about going forward. But I would say there are always headwinds and there are tailwinds that help deal with that growth, right? One is, I think we continue to show the street, and I think it's been one of the biggest disconnects, not so much on the buy side, but on the sell side, which is our ability to take cost out. I think that's where, not so much I say on the buy side, but where I think a number of these sell side analysts have said to me, it's such a hard one to get our head around, that I know how to model that capability. So part of today's purpose is to say to you there is runway on cost through productivity. And so we're not going to give the 2014 productivity number here today, but that's where the headroom comes to answer some of your question. Secondly, as Seem said, if we're fortunate enough to have interest rates move up under the basis we've got our fixed financing done for Astral, then obviously the pension funding capability, the amount of funding for pension comes back our way. Ultimately, the success of earning significant profits means our tax cash bill will go up, and we have to obviously stay within our guidance to do all that. And the last question is we have a range for a reason, and it is to stay within that range. We've been fortunate enough to be in the mid or low point, but we have a range for a reason. Not every single year is going to be the way the year before is, and we are committed to a dividend growth model that the street's, I think, pretty clear on. Hopefully that helps it. Yeah, one more, sure.
Is that still, you've said steady today. Is 5%-ish still kind of a loose goal?
Well, actually, we have never said 5% dividend increase, but it's become the norm. What is evident, though, as we've said in our circular, is our equity doesn't vest if we're not seeing close to 5% dividend increases. So we're pretty aligned with that, but there's no public target. Never has been. And we've exceeded the 5%, as everyone knows, over the last 4 years with some hard work. Yep. Glenn, go ahead.
Thanks. I had a couple of questions on revenue. So on the wireline side, the presentation makes the point you're going to see less discounting on TV and new products going forward. There's obviously the rate action as well. Those things help. On the other side, it's a competitive environment. There's discounting, say, for retention and acquisition of customers. Can you talk a little bit about what the overall trend is on discounting and wireline and whether 2013 will give, say, a better wireline ARPU performance than 2012?
Yeah, well, Wade, do you want to start with that, and then I'll pick it up?
Yeah, it's a very good question. We have seen a meaningful decrease in sort of discounts falling off as earlier aggressive promotions have now termed out, and we don't see the same aggressiveness of discount levels on a go-forward basis. I would say our focus is much more on winning the household than the ARPU on an individual product segment. So, take, for example, our new unlimited internet add-on that we provide on a triple. If somebody takes TV with us, they can get that. You know, you could make an argument that lowers internet ARPU. And it doesn't, but you could, you know, come to that conclusion. But for sure it drives household revenue for us, and that's really our core focus. So we feel pretty good about the ability to generate the right revenue levels at a household level on a go-forward basis.
Thanks. I had a follow-up on the wireless side. So we've got the big bucket smartphone plans out there with a gig of data or 3 gigs. You've got your LTE network. Can you give us a sense of how much take there is on the bigger-than-one-gig plans? Are you surprised, positively, negatively? Give us any sense of the proportion. And how much overage you're seeing now that people have got these phones in their hands?
Well, anything, you know, it's funny. I have a different perspective on it. Anything that drives data consumption lets us highlight our network superiority. And so we're fans of that. The reason our ARPU grows is because our mix improves. So we get more of the very heavy consumers come to us, or heavy users, both on business and consumer, come to us. In total, they spend more. So even if the rate per kilobyte or megabyte is slightly less, we still see a very positive impact on ARPU. And as Stephen talked about, our cost structure now on the network side allows us to leverage, you know, gain efficiencies of scale. So it's a winning formula for us. So we're happy with the way things are going.
The only other thing, Glenn, I mentioned, we've mentioned in the presentation, but it's not just the external market. It's also we're going through that first year of those first 5 customers who got the immediate discount with no revenue, and that starts to normalize. Not always the easiest thing to go through in the market, but it certainly that's giving us some of the a little better sense of, okay, revenue is always challenged on the wireline side, but maybe a little bit of room there. And secondly, as everyone saw, the competitive market moved on pricing in the cable industry, and of course that of course it's a, there's only a few providers, so that's obviously helpful. Yeah,
thanks very much, George. You had exceptional wireless results last year. Just following on from Glenn's comments, but adding another one. So when things are going so well, new entrants look as if they're very badly positioned for the auction, et cetera, the government perhaps looking embarrassed, and people like Rogers preempting changes of spectrum ownership. Are you at all concerned about a regulatory backlash, maybe not from the CRTC code of conduct, but future re-regulation of the industry, including, you know, forcing of MVNOs and the like? And on a similar vein to what Glenn was speaking about, so there are these new price plans there. There seems to be lower costs going forward for both subsidies, LTE efficiencies, and the like. To what extent are your EBITDA and margin projections based on cost versus ARPU growth going forward? Because the cost side looks better than the ARPU side going into 2013. Would you agree?
Okay, so one, you guys get ready to answer the second question, Wade, John, and whoever else wants to jump in. And on the first question, look, first of all, obviously we are in a regulated industry in total and deregulated in wireless. It is an issue on a global basis. The profile of the wireless industry at every G20 nation is pretty significant. I personally believe Canada has a really unique situation. We're one of the only countries in the world with three strong competitors. Just look at what happened in the fourth quarter in the U.S. in market share, and look what happened in Canada. And we have the leading wireless technology in the world. So I think we're sometimes trying to find a problem that doesn't exist. Actually, most other countries would probably give their right arm to have our industry structure with three strong players. In terms of what happens to the new entrants, we'll have to see how that plays out for them. A business model at $28 ARPU after 27 years in the industry has never worked. It's not going to work for anybody, so they're going to have to sort that out, not us. And I think the government has let the market, it's an open market, we're seeing what happens. The company that came from outside of Canada said they were going to destroy us. Let's see what happens. They got access to capital, and we'll just compete in the market. So I think the government's view should be there's wide open competition. Let's see who's standing when that's all finished. You know, there were 29 price reductions in the fourth quarter. It's a competitive industry. 29. And then matched times 7 carriers. Okay. I don't know I honestly don't know, and I'm not in your industry. I don't know if there's another industry in the fourth quarter that had 29 price changes. So I don't know what competition issue we're looking for, actually.
And so Divide, did you want the second half?
Oh, yeah, the second half of Divide's question. We almost got out of that.
Yes. Yes. We anticipate growing ARPU, and I presume you're asking about wireless. Yes. Yes, we absolutely see ARPU growth in 2013 for all the reasons I articulated. handsets keep getting better, our network keeps getting better, that drives more usage, that drives more ARPU. Our lead in mobile TV and the growth we're seeing that, driving tremendous opportunity there, some of the new things I talked about. Our change in mix is continuing. We opened 100 locations in the West last year. That's driving our performance in that market, which is a higher ARPU market. So all the fundamental building blocks are in place to continue to drive ARPU and revenue growth. And on the cost side, we just see a lot of elements that let us be more efficient. You know, and it's funny, if you talk about 29 rate plan changes and price changes, unless you have a good digital infrastructure, it gets tough to manage all that. And I think we really have a significant lead in that space. So the ability to change quickly through to very significant investments on the part of John in enabling an e-environment has been very helpful to us. So we continue to see an opportunity to drive out costs.
But Devine, the only thing I would add, one of the reasons Marianne and John took such time to go through is to try to say, you know, the fact that call volume in wireless went down with that growth last year is where we're picking up.
Yeah.
And I think John can comment, but I think said, and you had a slide, John, I think, around that, right?
Yeah. No question. I think we were down 2.2 million, Devine. Yeah, the CAGR moving into this year's 13% on a really good trend line. When folks tend to call you, you tend to be resolving issues. So the credits you would hand out are dilutive on the ARPU side, and that's declined dramatically. Wade hit a lot of them. The folks even moving from smartphone to smartphone, the rich browser smartphone they now have, is much more enabled for video. And you think of the usage that's occurring, and you ask how many gigs are being used. The 1 gig plan, remember that we have 1 million folks using TV on top of that 1 gig. So we're really priming the pump for extra ARPU and revenue usage with video. In fact, we're doubling down in terms of the investment for folks to do that. And lastly, you know, Stephen's productivity and the cost per gig delivered is terrific on LTE based on all the good things he's created and invested in that space. So we're very optimistic in terms of driving the margins and both revenue right now. And last one would be our smartphone penetration. That's the greatest upside. So I think everything points upwards there.
The back, Rob, I think.
Good morning. Thanks, George. My question would be for Wade. You highlighted the 30 points of device penetration gap between Canada and the U.S. Can you talk to your expectations of narrowing that gap and perhaps within that discuss where you are now on multiple device penetration and where that is going, also vis-a-vis the U.S. on that?
Yes. So the penetration difference between us and the U.S., if you plot penetration since year of inception, Canada and the U.S., you see a much narrower gap, so a lot of it seems to be related to, you know, time since market was launched. And then there are some structural differences between the U.S. and Canada that lead to some small difference, but ultimately we see an outcome that is not that dissimilar to other markets. In Europe, for example, where you have the very high roaming costs back and forth, and so people acquire multiple SIMs to deal with the expense side, drives penetration. We don't have quite the same environment here, so that would be something that we'd say not quite at that level. But the U.S. market and the Canadian market are not that dissimilar, and we have every expectation that we continue to see penetration grow as we go forward. I think for us, the most important driver of that is the advantage we have over the U.S. market and over the European market in driving functionality. So our network quality, and George has made the point several times, and I will again too, it's unbelievable. We have spectacular network strength and functionality in this country, and it drives more than other things, this upgrade move to smartphone and then just increase penetration as people find out, hey, I can... I can watch TV while I'm at my kid's soccer practice, or I can pay my bill through mobile commerce initiatives, or whatever it might be. I can get a lower insurance rate if I deploy that solution set. So we see lots of structural reasons driving increased penetration as we go forward. We're not worried at all that we're anywhere close to our peak.
Yeah, we think we go well over 100.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just a couple of extras on wireless. Wade, can you just speak to the machine-to-machine opportunity? We obviously hear Rogers talk a lot about it. Curious your thoughts on that opportunity. And then on postpaid churn, you know, the whole industry is seeing improvement there attributed to a bunch of factors. I think smartphones and shared plans will contribute going forward. How low do you think this could go for Bell? And then lastly, just a big picture one, maybe for whoever up there wants to take a crack at it. If churn is certainly a delta in the cost equation, just wondering, you know, when you look at consumer loyalty, where the telcos and specifically BC would stand on joining or starting a loyalty program.
Okay. Well, I'll take the first one, machine to machine, and then I'll let John touch on churn, and then loyalty program I'll try and cover off. But on machine to machine, I know Rogers has made a lot of public comments about the potential for that market, and I think everybody in the room would recognize that it's a large volume in terms of units and very low ARPU per unit industry. I believe that Bell is a leader in this space at the moment, and we have you know, ambition to keep in the leadership role in that space. It is a very integrated solution set typically that you deliver to end users who are interested in that. So our wireline assets and our wireline business relationships help us a lot in driving performance in machine to machine. I gave the example of the insurance company that we just did a deal with, so that's an example of machine to machine. But we're a strong player in machine to machine. I'm not going to get into specific numbers because that's competitive, but we're happy with our performance in machine to machine. And we do agree with Rogers that there is very meaningful upside still in the space, particularly so in wireless. So we're keen on the space. And John, I'll let you touch on churn, sure. And then I'll get back on loyalty.
Right. You know, I won't give you detailed guidance on where churn may or may not go on wireless. I would say the following. You know, understanding what a dissatisfier is for you today, knowing that proactively, and then deciding what we can do about that, you know, either on a passive or a proactive basis, is very, very powerful. In the past, it was always done more en masse, more into big segments, big lumpiness, but now you can do it at the level of one. So you know, I think the potential for improvement is absolutely there. And I think those improvements can be driven at the level of one, and they can be driven at a P&L at the level of one, which is very, very different than before. So enabling that, and I think this is across the industry, is one that folks are focused on. And I see further opportunities going forward. But ones that we won't drive churn down and spend at a level that creates negative consequences for the business. It will be one that maximizes the profitability of the business as we drive forward.
So we do have a loyalty program, and I actually let John talk about that as well. But I would say that our orientation is slightly different. Our entire focus always is how do we leverage the assets that Bell has to the benefit of our clients. And so one of the programs we just launched is something called the Bell Business Advantage Program. And what that does, it's not a loyalty program, but what that does, and it was launched in our business group, obviously, but it gives small and medium-sized businesses access to Bell's purchasing power. So the discounts we negotiate with suppliers, we make available to our small and medium business clients. That engenders loyalty to us because they, in fact, can save more money on other elements, other products they might buy for their business than they actually spend with us. So they make money coming to Bell for connectivity services as they take full advantage of it. But so those are the kinds of programs we use to drive increased retention within our subscriber base, and that's an example of one in the business area. And it's taking an asset we have, our purchasing power, and deploying it to the benefit of our consumers. And then John just launched a kind of a super elite program, if you want to call it that, and I'll let John touch on that.
I've never been a fan of loyalty programs that aren't core to our products and service offering. And we found that when you deliver a great service, that is the core link towards loyalty. We've recently launched a program last fall that addresses the needs of our most valuable customers, and we've seen just unbelievable results with that. And it's an example of what you can do. We didn't bring a bunch of bells and whistles. There aren't a bunch of points you can earn. It's just damn good service every day, 7x24, with 100% follow-up and satisfaction. So if you ask what the loyalty program is, that's it. And we measure that, and we know. And loyalty is measured by folks recommending our products and services, and the NPS scores correlate to that as well. So we're very much focused on it, but it's not a layer-on program or an adjunct to what we do. It is core to what we do, and it's focused on our core service and product.
I think just to add to that, you know, traditional loyalty programs can create some longer-term exposure as you have all these points out there that need to be redeemed, and that's an obligation and a liability for the organization. I hope people are picking up that our loyalty efforts do one of these things. They either make us better or they're funded by a third party, not us. And so in both cases, we engender, as I said, stickiness within our end-user community that, you know, you can see the results starting to bear fruit.
And the last thing I'd say is the more loyal you are to us, the less you pay. That's pretty well.
Thanks. Wayne, on the handset subsidy issue, do you think there's an opportunity for the industry to take this down? We're seeing a lot of high-performance Androids coming out at pretty low price points. We're seeing BlackBerry with some new products out there. We're seeing Windows 8 as well. So how do you think there's the opportunity to get what's been a tough challenge for the industry as we move to the smartphone era? Is that something where we could see progress and get multiple OSs and maybe above and beyond those HTML5, things like that?
Yeah. Well, again, a great question, and again, a structural reason that that favors us and Bell and the carrier community. The improvement in, say, the new BlackBerry devices and the you know, intense competitive dynamics in the Android space, and then Microsoft trying to get in and Apple trying to keep its lead, all of that leads to much greater competition on the handset side, and you know that where there is greater competition, there is some benefit to the buyer of the goods and services being sold. And in our case, you know, we see pricing that that could end up being more favorable for us as we go forward as a result of that competition. I think more importantly, we see the rate at which people want to upgrade their handsets is increasing because, wow, that's a really cool new feature. I want to get one of those, and yet I'm not finished my existing term yet. And so Bell and I believe others have introduced lower cost, that's lower cost to us, greater flexibility, that's greater flexibility to the end user upgrade program. So you can take a new device by buying out your old one, and that allows us to recover some COA that we would have invested previously as people upgrade their handsets. So those two factors, I think, make us comfortable that we don't have a runaway COA or COM exposure in front of us. It's why we feel comfortable we're going to stick at that 10 to 11% range on COM. And, you know, we see COA, it is a fiercely competitive market out there, so it's, you know, not entirely our call, but certainly there are some good structural reasons why we feel comfortable with, as I said, our financial forecast for the coming year.
Now, clearly on the subsidy side, first of all, as a Canadian, we want to see BlackBerry successfully. And then selfishly from a business perspective, a successful BlackBerry is very important to us. And early signs are quite positive because leveling that supplier playing field creates the right tension amongst the suppliers. And if you're a buyer from a supplier, you want them to have the tension, not us. And so that's exactly what we think. An early signs on the BlackBerry are encouraging, and we're really looking forward. That may turn out to be a Canadian phenomenon in terms of the amount of loyalty to that brand. Let's hope it's global, but that'll only help Canadian wireless carriers for sure, and hopefully help BlackBerry. Good question. Sorry, go ahead. Where's the microphone? Okay, sorry. Yep, go ahead.
Thanks. You gave some great presentations on your best-in-class capabilities in field ops and customer service. And first of all, kudos for that, for the turnaround over the past few years. But I noticed in the past 3 years, most of your acquisition dollars have gone into media and content. Is there any way to maybe leverage those best-in-class skills you now have in making acquisitions where there could be big synergies, taking your skills and buying other ILECs? And related to that, with Bell Alliant, do you share all of that capability you have, or if Bell ever owned 100% of it, would there be some incremental synergy that could flow to BCE shareholders?
Yeah, well, just a couple of questions. First of all, on the acquisition front, every acquisition we've made has been to drive the imperatives and how we see the industry evolving over time, right? So clearly, you mentioned the media acquisition. We think Q9 is absolutely right in the sweet spot of our traditional business. We think Virgin was right in the sweet part of our business. The Source, the beta of Bell went down when we bought into the Habs, the Leafs, the Source, and Q9. Right? We lowered our cost of capital in those acquisitions for the overall entity if you step back and think about how we de-risk the organization. In terms of Bell Line, Karen is just an excellent operator. She's done a fantastic job with that asset. I know that's what the street's view is. And we obviously, I'm chair of the board. John sits on the board. So absolutely best practices are shared between both companies. We are a significant shareholder. We want that Bell Line organization to do well, so there's no secrets in terms of trying to help them out, and likewise on the other way. And there aren't many ILECs that I know in Canada that would add to that portfolio, so we're pretty focused on executing what we've got.
Yes. Thank you. I just wanted to ask a technological question. On the wireline side, you mentioned on the slide that the usage on from customers is still well below your bandwidth of 35 or 75 coming through with the pair bonding. But I assume customers who needs are higher, you won't catch them in the average. They'll be outliers and they'll go to somebody else. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how far the pair bonding is going to take you out in terms of years before we see ultra-high-definition TVs coming onto the market and expanding the needs for customers? And the wireless is, we've seen transactions in the U.S. where we've seen, you know, AT&T, Verizon separating somehow in terms of bandwidth use with the transactions they've done between themselves. Do you expect in Canada to see some kind of separation going forward in terms of bandwidth and 700 megahertz and AWS and which, companies using different technologies on their bandwidth?
Sure. Well, I'll take that one. So a couple of things. One, Ultra HD. So we do follow all the CES announcements and everything very closely, of course. There's a couple of things happening in the HD space. One is we currently encode our network with MPEG-4. It's the latest and greatest. By the time Ultra HD comes out, which we believe is really more in the kind of 2015-ish time frame and maybe beyond, because it's really only for 54-inch TVs and above that'll take advantage, plus you need the content and everything else. But there's a newer codec called the HEVC codec, and not to get too complicated, but we believe that'll reduce the by about two-thirds demand, and so we'll be able to ride those codec roughly at the same time as HDTV, 4K TVs are coming onto the market. Plus, I'll leave it to your call. You know, there's a lot of hype around 3D TV last year and years before, and it really hasn't taken off, so we'll see what happens with 4K. So I think there's a lot of room left, particularly with pair bonding, and as we do more and more fiber each and every year, of course, that's sort of the future-proof technology like I mentioned before. On the spectrum side, on wireless, we also follow global ecosystems. You know, we are very active in understanding the 700 ecosystem, what Verizon's doing versus what AT&T's doing. And we're very tight in understanding that. And just rest assured that we'll follow the most global ecosystem we possibly can as it relates to the 700 megahertz auction. I don't know if George...
The only thing I would add is where we have built out FTTN, we are 100% comfortable. We are exceeding any demand of any customer for speed. We have no issue in the marketplace with any customer. That's a yesterday issue for our company, and all we do is pick that up with bonding, because what bonding does is extend our footprint. And the real issue we have, you see, is how fast we can get that FTTN or FTTH footprint out beyond the 5 millionth of the city and just keep pushing that out and pushing out the IPTV. So we're not, even with the use of IPTV on our bandwidth, we're not seeing any issue at all. And we have some marketing announcements, which we're not going to make here in the coming few weeks from Wade Shop, to take that up even another step, particularly in the condo market, where it's probably one of the great areas. As you're in a condo, you know traditionally it was you had to be only with the cable guys. And we've now broken through that, log jam. Now we're putting fiber into the condos, and we think that's a great market share opportunity for us for internet and TV, and we're going to be all over that as all these buildings finally fill up outside this room, we hope.
Thanks. Couple of questions. First, on the wireless side, just the bigger picture on smartphone penetration. You guys talked about Canada being a leader there. Wondering where you think smartphone penetration could go in Canada specifically, where that ceiling could be, and also give some context as to where you think, whether that ceiling you think has actually gone up over the last couple of years as you see more device come to the market. The second question is more on the wireline side. IPTV numbers, the ads have been phenomenal, but on the satellite side, we're still seeing some losses. Wondering if you guys are going to be doing something there to try to change the trend there, to try to see some improvement or at least lower losses on satellite. Thanks.
Okay. So on smartphones, I think there's a balance between consumer demand and, honestly, 100% of people want a smartphone. So what is the cap? 100%, because everybody wants one. And what's counter to that is how much of an investment are we willing to make in COA for a particular subscriber who might be less creditworthy than you would hope for. So I think at the end of the day, given the cost benefits we'll see as competition in smartphones heats up and that insatiable appetite for a device that lets you do anything and everything, the only thing that's the counter push against that is the creditworthiness, frankly, of the subscriber and how much of an investment are we willing to make. And there's increasing sophistication in our credit scoring systems as well, so we're able to go deeper and deeper. Next year, we're targeting to exit at about 75%, I think, if I recall. And we don't see a kind of a limit to where that might go on the smartphone side. On the satellite side, if you want me to take that, George mentioned that we have about 15% of our IPTV subs come from our satellite subscriber base, but of course we're faced with IPTV or 5TV competition in most markets now. Telus is doing it out west, Manitoba, and, that territory, Cairns Sheriff in the Bell Alliance territory. So satellite is getting that pressure from 5TV technology on a national basis. Having said that, we think we can make some improvements in our performance in satellite, and we're certainly working hard at doing that.
Well, we will see cannibalization there.
For sure.
Right? It's a net. And then executing, as Wade said, where not as aggressive from Karen or from the Telus folks is where we can probably be a little stronger on the satellite side. And the service on that has been top rate. Making great cash flow from it, but it's not going to grow close to the 5TV for sure. It's a good question. Why don't we take one more question. Yep.
Thanks. Tim Casey from BMO. Could you talk a little bit about the trends you expect to see in your ability to load the network with five subscribers and obviously any targets you have, if you wanted to share those with us. But you mentioned you see some promos falling off and you're not renewing them. So how do you see the trends in loading, and are you suggesting that you a lot of the incremental loading will come out of the condo game as opposed to the single-family home? And second question would be on MLSC. I know you've just got control of it, but, I mean, what's the ultimate end game there? It just seems unsustainable that you and Rogers would stand pat at the ownership levels you have, given, as you've articulated, sports is the most important content and everything suggests it's going to continue to be a very valuable content. So any comments on how that relationship will develop?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you asked the question on 5TV because we've confused, so I apologize if we have. What we said is those customers who came on promotions last year for the first time are coming off because it's only our first full year in the business. We will be just as aggressive in attracting new customers this year. In fact, we have to see accelerated growth of 5TV subs this year to justify the extended footprint that we put in place. The end goal, 1 out of 2 TV subs. How fast we get there, that's over to the marketing folks. But it's 1 out of 2. That's where there's 2 ways into the home. We want 50% of the TVs. It's just a pace and how we get there. And that's what we're going to play out. On the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and the same with our investment in the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, that is clearly really Kevin's space. And Cap, if you want to make a couple of comments, feel free, and I'll talk on the partnership issue myself.
Yeah, I just, you know, we talked about the importance of sports. Positions that we've taken have definitely helped us in negotiating what is still market value rates, but these are complex and tense negotiations. So that ability and that open door has helped us very much to secure, like I said, from MLSE, we will wind up with a much better lease package than what we have today. Whenever the current one expires, and to George for the future.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important for investors. The 20-year arrangement on content has been arranged for us going forward in the acquisition of MLSC. So the TSN franchise knows it has access to half of all Leaf games, Raptor games, and soccer games for the next 20 years on all four screens. That's the core to that, and we're paying ourselves in that ownership model. So that's the model, and if you read, there are some reports yesterday, there's no one with that integrated solution globally to lower your cost of capital in your media business, which is really what I think we've done if you really follow it through, and there's no better content on the planet than those two assets to have the involvement of the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto sports franchises. In terms of the Rogers relationship in that particular area, it could not be better. We have proven strategically on Inukshuk we can kill each other in the market and work strategically when we need to with our competitor in the West on a network sharing agreement where, quite frankly, it's a never-ending war, as everybody knows, but we do things that are intelligent for our shareholders. So I have absolutely, I think we'll go on, I think it'll be years and years, that partnership with them in that particular asset. And I think if they were there, I don't want to speak for them, I think they see strategic benefits for them. We see strategic benefits for us. I guess if someone moved out of the media business or did something completely different, you'd look at different partners. But I think people should relax that that's going to be, I think that'll be a very good sustainable model. And winning franchises will drive revenue for Kevin. That's the name of the game there. Let me just finish with, just quickly, hopefully it was helpful for the community to get some insights into what we're trying to do. The focus is clear. It's on cash flow. The only thing I'll leave you with one comment. I used to say for years and years when I competed with Bell, that what would you do if Bell ever woke up? Well, we woke up. Thanks very much.